with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome. The 13th day of May, 2009. Conversation Radio at its very finest. An excellent hour from Mark Levine in the previous one, and a dandy good show from Guy James 3 hours ago. I never cease to be amazed at all the bricks that the horn makes with so little straw. And that straw you provide. Stunning, really. Absolutely stunning. Well, here we are. It's the middle of the week. Hump day. Downhill to Friday. But of course, you who are regulars to the program know that this midweek, this Wednesday, is ever so much more than any of that. Brothers and sisters, you know, today is, as is every Wednesday, hallelujah, prayer meeting on the horn. Choir master, would you get us started with the offertory hymn, please?
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen. Let me hear you say, praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Present for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, he's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs. And soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer.
Hallelujah!
Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD. Just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity, yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Talking about.
Jesus.
I can't hear you.
Jesus.
I still can't hear you.
Jesus
Christ our Lord. Do you know his name?
Hallelujah.
Have you seen his glory? Have you felt the warm and comfort of his precious love? Praise Jesus. Praise his holy name. Praise his blessed spirit. Praise his everlasting love. Jesus Christ our Lord. Listen to me now. Listen to me. The prince of darkness is upon the lion.
Hallelujah! Ting tang, walla walla bing bang! Shamalama ding dong! I love you. Hallelujah! Glory, glory, glory! Welcome to the Cathedral of Common Sense. I am Archbishop Bob Kincaid. Come on down the blood red carpet and lay, kneel, kneel, sinner, kneel! Sinners, and lay your hands upon the subwoofers and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through your body and a cleansing you. Ha! Glory! This is prayer meeting. It is Wednesday on the horn. And we got plenty to work with tonight, brethren and sistren. We do, we do, we do. I thought I would start with a Bible verse. This being prayer meeting and all. I thought we would go to the book of John, the Gospel of John, chapter 18. Verses 28 to 38. Then they brought Jesus from Caiaphas to the Roman governor's residence. Now it was very early morning. They did not go into the governor's residence, so they would not be ceremonially defiled, but could eat the Passover meal. So Pilate came outside to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" And they replied, "Well, if this man were not a criminal, we would not have handed him over to you." And Pilate then told them, "Take him yourselves and pass judgment on him according to your own law." The Jewish religious leaders replied, "Well, we cannot legally put anyone to death." Now this happened to fulfill the word Jesus spoke, indicating what kind of death he was going to die. So Pilate went back into the governor's residence, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus replied, "Are you saying this on your own initiative, or have others said it to you about me?" And Pilate answered, "I'm not a Jew, am I? You, your own people, and your chief priests handed you over to me. What have you done?" And Jesus replied, "My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world, my servants would fight to prevent me being handed over to the Jewish authorities. But now my kingdom is not here, from here." Then Pilate said, "So you are a king." And Jesus replied, "You say that I'm a king. I've been born. I've come into the world for this reason, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." And Pilate asked, "Well, what is truth?" What is truth? Well, darn good question, that. Because, you see, that's one version. That's the Book of John version. Then there's the trial before Pilate as it's laid out in Mark chapter 15. Straightway in the morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council and bound Jesus and carried him away and delivered him unto Pilate. Mark doesn't have all the flummery about, well, you know, we can't go in the gubernatorial residence or we'll be defiled and we can't have the Passover meal. Because Mark wasn't working the whole anti-Semitic side of the street that John was working, because John was working that side of the street a whole lot of years later when they needed to boost that propaganda. Catapult the propaganda. That's what Dim Leader used to say. Catapult the propaganda. So it just says they carried him away and delivered him to Pilate. And Pilate asked him, "Art thou the king of the Jews?" And Jesus answered and said, "You say I am. Thou sayest it." And the chief priests accused him of many things. "We hear he killed Sharon Tate." But he answered nothing. You know, that answering nothing part, that really gets people crazy. A scream, anything. "No, I didn't, you sorry so-and-so." You know, then you're down, you're playing on their level. But Jesus answered them nothing. And Pilate asked him again, saying, "Answerest thou nothing? Behold how many things they witness against thee." And Jesus just stands there, silent as an idol.
as the book says, so that Pilate marveled. He was practicing nonviolence. He was practicing passive resistance. So after that, as the Bible puts it, Pilate passes judgment and says, I can see that this man has done no wrong. Let his blood be upon your heads, supposedly. And as Mark noted, 2,000 years of Roman Catholic anti-Semitism is based on that. Let his blood be upon your heads and those of your children. But they take, after that trial, which resembles, surprisingly, nothing so much as a kangaroo court trial at Guantanamo that apparently are going to continue. What happens to a Gitmo concentration camp detainee who goes to one of these military kangaroo court trials and, as Jesus did, says nothing? Now, if they were accorded constitutional rights that we have guaranteed in the Constitution, the right to remain silent is absolute under the Fifth Amendment. And nobody can say anything to the jury about it. No one can comment on it. No one can allude to it. No one can say, hey, look, he didn't say nothing. He must be guilty. Under the sham kangaroo court rules, though, anything goes. Why, your generalness, if he's innocent, why didn't he say he was innocent? You know, that kind of crap. But after all this, Jesus is taken away, and most of you raised in the Christian tradition, and many of you not raised in the Christian tradition, probably know that there were any number of mean, vile, nasty, hateful, yes, torturous things done to the Son of Man. Yeah, that's what he called himself. He didn't call himself God on earth. Didn't call himself born of a virgin. Hey, look, everybody, I was born of a virgin. No, that ain't in there. He is the Son of Man. And that is a freighted phrase if ever there was one. But he's taken away. He's whipped. Pilate, you know, punts. Pilate says, his accusers keep insisting. He stirs up the people, and he's teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee and even as far as this place. And then Pilate, being a good Roman governor here at Galilee, huh, well, I don't have any jurisdiction here. Huh, see ya. So they trot him off to Herod. And Herod, it turns out, is happy to see him, because he's heard about him for a while, the book tells us, this being in particular Luke chapter 23. He's heard about Jesus. Yeshua, his real name. Brown skin, Palestinian carpenter. But he's heard of him the way that, you know, maybe you or I have heard of David Blaine. He does these cool party tricks. Herod, you definitely want to be at a wedding feast when Jesus shows up. Jugs of water, bang, wine. I mean, I think you personally ought to hire this guy. The kingdom's wine budget would go to zero overnight. Hey, Jesus, whip up a few more jugs of Merlot, would you, buddy? So Luke says that Herod had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by him. Hey, do that water into wine thing, would you, Jesus? I hear it's real hot at the parties. So Herod questions Jesus. And again, Yeshua, he don't say anything. Meanwhile, the whole time, if you can imagine the tableau, the chief priests and the rabbis and the scribes are all standing around him, screaming their fool heads off at him. He's misleading the people! And then verse 11 of chapter 23 of Luke. And Herod, with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. And Pilate hauls these prattling priests back to him and says, "You brought this man to me. You brought this man to me as one who incites the people to rebellion. And behold, having examined him before you, I found no guilt in this man regarding the charges with which you make against him and for which you want him whacked." And neither has Herod, my new friend. You know, we hated each other before, but now that you've put us through this, we're buddies. We're going to the chariot races next Sunday. Verily I say to you, I got Bucephalus in the third by a nose, and I may hit the trifecta too. So Herod ain't found nothing wrong with him neither. And he ain't done nothing that deserves getting killed over. So I'm going to punish him, and I'm going to release him. And all the scribes and Pharisees and the chief priests and the Sadducees and the high exalted 32nd noble Turks from the temple just start having a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy. And the people below start screaming, "Crucify him! Give us Barabbas!" You know the story. And Pilate releases Barabbas, who had been a rabble-rouser of the people, and a terrorist, and a killer. Barabbas was kind of like the Menachem Begin of his day. A murderer. An insurrector. And they take Jesus away and beat the snot out of him and jam a crown of thorns down on his head. And they make him bleed from places he didn't know he could bleed from. And you know what? There's not a word in there about Jesus saying anything during it. He only starts talking again when he gets to the hill called Golgotha, where he knows it's going to end. And Jesus turns to the crowd as he's headed toward the hill and says, "Daughters of Jerusalem, stop weeping for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, 'Blessed are the barren and the wombs that never bore and the beasts that never nursed.' Then they will begin to say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' For if they do these things when the tree is green, what will happen when it is dry?" The soldiers crucifying Jesus tried to humiliate him. Tried to embarrass him. "Hey, look, here comes the King of the Jews." Yeah, if you're the King of the Jews, save yourself. A couple of criminals already hanging there being crucified. "Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us." There is a reason that the story of the Passion is so profound and so revered. But there are reasons that we should pay attention to its story that go far beyond any religious adoration. And it has all the world to do with something that was said in the Congress today. And it was said by a slow-eyed, repig-licking, hypocritical, closeted freak who sits in the United States Senate and draws his breath and his pay, and you and I help sign the check. That would, of course, be Don't Ask, Don't Tell Lindsey Graham. In a hearing on detainee interrogations. Yeah, you got to hear it to believe it.
Do you believe that any good information was obtained through harsh interrogation techniques? Can you say that there was no good information?
Well, from what I know on the Abu Zubaydah, I would like you to evaluate the information that we got before.
Well, the vice president suggesting that there was good information obtained, and I'd like the committee to get that information. Let's have both sides of the story here. I mean, one of the reasons these techniques have survived for about 500 years is apparently they work.
Because
you evil bastard. One of the reasons these techniques have survived for about 500 years is apparently they work. I don't have the words to sufficiently condemn you, Lindsey Graham. I don't have the faith to declare with certainty that there is a barbecue pit in the nethermost depths of hell with a spit ready to be jammed up your ass for all eternity so that you can be slow roasted for statements like that forevermore until the ending of time itself. I don't have the faith or the words. But I have the thoughts, and I have the soul, and I have the emotion. One of the reasons these techniques have survived for about 500 years is apparently they work. God damn you, Lindsey Graham. God damn you forever. God damn you to the furthest extent of his capability to damn some poor suffering member of humanity. God damn you, Lindsey Graham. Those techniques haven't survived for about 500 years, you hypocritical freak. They were used 2,000 years ago! And Jesus answered them not. They don't work! They never work. They yield false confessions. As Jesse Ventura noted last night, give me Dick Cheney and let me waterboard him for a while and I'll have him confess to the Sharon Tate murder. They don't work, you monster. You godforsaken fiend, you servant of Satan. You walking manifestation of evil upon the planet. You vile, you contemptible imp. You closeted monster. They don't work. But Jesus answered them not. Go read your Bible, you family values repig licking. Go read it. Quit thumping it quite so much. And go read it, you sorry bastard. And Jesus answered them not. The Romans weren't even a little bit squeamish about torture. Long before lumber was hauled up on the hill called Golgotha, Marcus Licinius Crassus quelled a slave rebellion led by Spartacus. And once all was said and done, he took the rebellious slaves and marched them up the Appian Way, the Via Appia, that extended from the boot heel of Italy back to Rome. Every half a mile or so, he'd stop, and on either side of the road, he'd erect a crucifix with a rebellious slave conveniently attached.
The Appian Way was lined with the bodies of 5,000 slaves
to appease the irrational terror of the conveniently terrorized Roman citizens. What did the Romans learn from even one of those 5,000? Nothing. Just as with, 80-some-odd years later, an itinerant day laborer laden with dust who had walked the dry roads of the Galilee and Judea. The Romans would learn nothing from Yeshua, for they had not ears to hear nor eyes to see. They would learn nothing, though they tortured him ceaselessly, though they jammed crowns of thorns upon his head so that they lacerated his scalp and embedded into his skin and made the blood run into his eyes. They learned nothing. No information was given. Though they tormented him, though they mocked him, though they used every technique at their disposal, they learned nothing. And Jesus answered them not. Lindsey Graham, you psychopath, you closeted sociopathic goon. These techniques have not survived for about 500 years because apparently they work. These techniques have survived from the dawn of human consciousness itself because with the dawning of human consciousness has come the dawning of sadism, of people who enjoy the infliction of misery and pain and torment and the extension thereof and get their jollies from it like your party does. Lindsay. Imagine, Lindsay, if you came out of the closet, what your party, your holier-than-thou, upstanding, God-fearing, righteous party, would like to do to you. Imagine, Lindsay, imagine. What does the preacher say in that clip we run at the beginning of our Wednesday night prayer meeting program? What does he say, brothers and sisters? He says, the prince of darkness is upon the land. He is, brothers and sisters, he is. He is upon the land, and his spirit infuseth deeply into the being of the ranking membership of the Republican Party and buries deeply into the very essence of the subhuman nature of the likes of Lindsey Graham. Terrible things happen to the human soul in the closet. And the closet has turned Lindsey Graham into something other than human. The closet has turned Lindsey Graham into a man who wants to have a discussion about the good parts of torture. And Jesus answered them not. And Jesus answered them not. I have here in front of me photographs. I believe these are some of the photographs that the White House declared today that they do not want to come out. You know the phone number, by the way, 877, toll-free, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head-on, H-E-A-D-O-N. If you want to save us a nickel or a buck, The direct dial number is 304-658-3333. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And you are welcome to comment on this. Tell me if I'm wrong. The White House had said, yeah, okay, well, through the Justice Department, we're going to agree to release the photos. And then they found the reverse gear on the morality car, the ethics car. They found it, and the car went into reverse, full speed ahead. Full speed reverse. So that you get the following statement from White House spokesman Robert Gibbs today.
Once again, I don't follow. Where's the disincentive?
The disincentive is in the notion that every time one of these photos is taken, that it's going to be released. That nothing is added by the release of the photo. Right? The existence of the investigation is not increased because of the release of the photo. It's just to provide, in some ways, a sensationalistic portion of that investigation.
Wrong. The American people not only deserve to have these photos released, the American people deserve to have these photos plastered on freaking billboards all over the country with a caption underneath that said, "You did this." A caption that says, "You are responsible for this." A caption that says, "You sat still and remained silent while this was done in your name." It is not sensationalistic. Sensationalistic is a shot of Britney Spears' cooch with no underwear on getting out of a limousine. Okay, Robert Gibbs, that is sensationalistic. This, however, is evidence of war crimes and crimes against humanity. This, sir, is the ultimate necessity. But let's hear his explanation.
These are all investigations that were undertaken by the Pentagon and have been concluded. But I think if every time somebody took a picture of detainee abuse, if any time any of those pictures were mandatorily necessarily released, despite the fact that they were being investigated, I think that would provide a disincentive to take those pictures and investigate.
My eyes are crossing. They're rolling back in their heads. They're swimming in their sockets. Do I understand Robert Gibbs correctly? Do I understand that we don't want to release the photos because then if we release the photos, then the people doing this abuse will stop taking photos while they're doing the abuse? What? And then the same old tired sorry excuse was also made. Well, it'll put the troops at risk. You know what? You know what puts the troops at risk? What puts the troops at risk is having madmen in government that think that having the troops do things like this is somehow beneficial. That's what puts the troops at risk. Oh, Lord, yes. I have some photographs in front of me from the Sydney Morning Herald. It was said in the email in which I received them that these are some of the photos that the Pentagon doesn't want released. Remember us talking about it, and this is where radio, you know how much I love radio, you know how much I love the warmth of the medium, but this is where it fails. Because I cannot show you these photos. They are at smh.com.au. More snaps from Abu Ghraib. Ghraib. There are 15 of them. The first one shows an American soldier camo pants and a T-shirt with latex gloves on, holding the prisoner in that position which was described in the words of J. Bybee, that American patriot, as the position for the attention slap. He has the head and neck of the detainee wrapped in the crook of his left elbow, and his right arm is cocked back. Only it ain't going to be a slap, boys and girls. It's going to be a punch in the head. Apparently in the back of the head. As a scattering of nude and semi-nude, bleeding detainees lay on the floor in a heap around him. That's one of the photos. Another of the photos shows an individual in a ragged robe holding a box with a bag over his head. Or perhaps he's standing. I can't quite tell. Another of this series of 15 photographs is a still life. Of a torn package and a concrete floor covered in blood and gore. Another photo still shows a victim hanging upside down, his hands bound, naked, with his feet restrained to the framing of a top bunk. The fifth photograph is of the same grinning soldier who was giving the attention punch to the soldier in the first photograph, grinning like he had just shot a rhinoceros in Africa, with his prisoner bound, laying prone on a stretcher, with the American soldier grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. That's the fifth photo. The sixth photo shows the same soldier wearing his latex gloves, of course, but this is a different color of latex gloves. These are white. The others were blue. Performing what appears to be some impromptu dentistry on a man laying prone with his mouth jacked open and blood flowing from his mouth. The seventh photo is of an older man, several days' growth of beard on his face, blood on his forehead, his eyes blacked out to, I suppose, hide his identity, the eyes being the window into the soul, of course. He wears a black leather jacket. Underneath his black leather jacket, his shirt is splattered with his own blood, which has flowed from his mouth and his head. And this photo, which I cannot completely comprehend, because I don't know what the hell it is. Because if it is what it is, if it is, I showed it to Agnes and I said, what the hell is this, honey? And she said, oh my God. The detainee is naked. He is shown from the back. On his lower back are open, bleeding wounds, appearing to be about the size, each wound appearing to be about the size of a dime. The crack of his butt is covered with a black box to preserve his anonymity, I suppose, because is the rectum the window to the soul, too? I don't know. But these wounds, the best that Agnes could figure out, and I can't disagree with her, these wounds appear to have been made by a drill. They're not gunshots. They're not knife wounds. They're neat and circular and bloody. Photograph 9. An individual in a semi-prone position on his back with some sort of white spew flowing from his mouth and his eyes again blacked out with a black box. He is, of course, as was typical of our conduct there, naked. Photograph number 10 is a grainy shot in the weird sort of green half-light of the hell that was Abu Ghraib, with dogs in a state of rearing attack facing a man who is a naked man at a long viewpoint, a naked man, most of his body blacked out with the ubiquitous black box, his hands behind his head, recoiling in horror from the killer attack dog wielded by the American soldier. That's photograph number 10. Photograph number 11, an American soldier from the back. In the foreground, a man with his underwear pulled down, laying on the ground. With written in magic marker on his hip, "I am a rapist." The American soldier, having written that, spelled rapist, R-A-P-E-I-S-T. He's in the foreground. In the background behind him, one man sits naked, cross-legged, facing the wall with a bag over his head. Standing in front of him, a naked man with his hands behind his head, a bag over his head, and the soldier facing the third man, kneeling before him, his hands out in some form of supplication, he also naked, crouched on the balls of his feet, as the American soldier appears to slap him in the head. Then there's photograph 12. Photograph 12 is of a man, his profile blacked out by that same ubiquitous black box. He is wrapped in a green and white floral print robe. He faces a beige-colored door. The beige-colored door is marked with the imprint of his blood in two places, about head high and about as far as his head would slide if he were to slump to his knees. The man has had his face rammed into the door, again, in order to achieve his cooperation. Photograph 13. Merely a bust shot of a naked man, his eyes covered, blood running down his face, and the evidence of a visible head wound, a broad, lengthy slash across the top of his recently shaven head that is still weeping darkened blood. Photograph 14, a headshot that would, if you've ever seen the photograph of the unwrapped Ramses II, this is reminiscent of that. The surroundings are not entirely clear. His eyes are blacked out, but the bandage over his eye indicates that one of them has been gouged out. His teeth are broken. His mouth is partially open. A spot of blood appears on his forehead. And all we have is his head to see. He is naked. You can see the covering about him. It looks like some sort of plastic sheeting and drops of condensation upon it. Hard to tell if this man has just been waterboarded. And then, photograph 15. Two naked men, one of them, the one on the right, with those same odd, strange, drill bit-like wounds on his upper right arm. Standing naked with a man on the left, they are handcuffed together. The man on the right's head is tilted back in a cry of agony. These are the photos. These are the photos that the Obama administration calls sensationalistic, and which you and I would likely call, so long as we have any sense of ethics or morals about us, would call evidence of ferocious felonies. These are the photos that the Obama administration does not want released because the Obama administration wants to look forward and not back. These are the evidence of our complicity. Yours and mine, brothers and sisters, yours and mine. Who did not, at the first evidence of this, go and live in Washington, D.C., around the Capitol and around the White House until every last bit of evidence was released. Who did not occupy Washington, D.C. until the monsters and murderers and torturers were themselves driven shamefully from office via peaceful and legal means. These we own. You own. I own. If you believe in an afterlife, these photographs are evidence that you and I, as American citizens, will answer for. And for which, if you are again a person of faith, I would strongly advise that you remember in your prayers every day and every night for the rest of your existence and beg forgiveness of the loving God you worship for your failure to stop these from happening. These are not sensationalistic, Mr. Obama. These are not sensationalistic, Mr. Gibbs. They are a sad and sorry reminder of the depths to which a nation can fall when its citizenry abdicates its sovereignty and when its citizenry absolves itself of its responsibility to be the people who hold the power in this country. Release them all, Mr. Obama. Release every last one of them. I don't care what the dead-enders. I don't care what the 20%ers. I don't care what the weird, fatuous, freakish members of the Repig-Lickin' Party and their enablers in the for-profit media say. Let us see them, Mr. Obama, that we may make atonement for them, that we may make obeisance unto our gods or non-gods, that these men may never, ever, ever, ever happen again in my name, in your name, in our names, in the names of my children and my grandchildren, and in the names of Sasha and Malia. This was done in their names too, Mr. Obama. It was done in their names too, and they too must be able to understand how far wrong this nation went, that this nation may be healed, and that this nation may be freed, and that this nation may make proper atonement for the evil that for 8 long tormented years was loosed upon the world. Release the photos. Release them all. Release them all. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
You have a link to that site?
smh.com.au. Search more snaps from Abu Ghraib.
That's why I couldn't find him. I found the website, but I didn't use the right search parameters. Okay.
Here, let me go to the chat room.
smh.com.au.
If you can get in there, just, let's see if it's working. Control. Okay, ELO tells me the link will be on the homepage shortly.
Oh, Duke. I did want to add one point about Leslie Graham.
Lindsay, yes.
Yes, I agree that he is quite probably closeted.
No, he's the biggest open. He's the biggest open secret in Washington.
Yeah, he probably gets his jollies off of this. That's That's the main reason why torture has continued for as long as it has, because there is always somebody who gets his jollies off it. But I think with Graham, there's another reason. His cowardice.
Yes, absolutely.
His utter, complete cowardice. Now, if I can manage to do it, what I'm going to do is I'm going to spread. I run two blogs. I'm going to spread those pictures all over them, all over the place.
Good.
Screw Barack Obama. You don't want him posted. Tough. I disagree. And the argument that it will make our soldiers targets.
I'm not, you know, and I'm trying to figure out if these are the more of the photos that they don't want released, or if this is some previous batch. But I had not seen them before, Susan. And even though I know what they're going to be, every time I'm a little bit more shocked, a little bit more sickened. And they're not, you know, sensationalism? No.
The thing with me is, if they were, you know, that worried about the safety of our soldiers,
they wouldn't have done it in the first place.
Really, really worried about when the first pictures came out. Lo, these many years ago. Because that's the reason why we have all these people coming into Iraq and Afghanistan from all these other countries saying, I want to fight. Let's get it out. Lance the wound.
You know, I don't do that Glenn Beck crying behind the microphone thing very often, but this gets me as close as I can get, Susan.
Yeah. This is like an infected wound. You have a choice. You could let it go septic and poison your entire system, or you can lance it, get the crap out there as stinky as it is.
And see, you know, one of the things, and I want to make it clear on this, one of the reasons these photos can't come out and these photos can't be plastered on billboards is because if you do that, then the whole look forward and not back BS just goes through the floor. It just don't wash no more.
Exactly. And there's Dick Cheney smiling and that, pardon my language, that shitty grin, because he knows Barack Obama is protecting him and he can stand there and confess to monstrous crimes because he knows he's not going to pay anything for it. He's laughing because both Obama and Cheney and all of the Bushies know, unless it hits the TV screens, it never existed. These pictures need to come out. They need to be on TV.
Oh, but see, no. See, no, they won't be on TV because, you know, the American sensibilities are too delicate, and we can't show graphic violence like this. And you know, Brian Williams would have to do a disclaimer. Now, ladies and gentlemen, these photos may be graphic and shocking, and it may be something you don't want. No, by God, no! The way you introduce these photos is, ladies and gentlemen, these photos are graphic and shocking, and if you get up and leave the TV set, your soul is damned to hell. You sit and watch this, America. You sit and watch it.
You see what you have done by your complicits. That's wrong tense. I'm sorry. You see what you have done by your silence, by your rolling over, by your voting for George Bush, here is what you have done.
Own it.
Now, be proud of it. And take it to yourself and love it.
Tell me what attack, just tell me what attack was stopped by this. Tell me, I'm with Dick Cheney on it. Release it, by God. Tell me what good information you got, Dick. Tell me about it. I want to hear all of it. I want to see how many buildings didn't go up in flames. I want to know how many Walmarts didn't get blown up by crazed Muslims because of these wounds at Abu Ghraib. I want to know.
Yeah. right. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I don't care if there's a bloody nuke sitting in the next room. You do not torture.
Oh, I understand. The reason that the guy that I said looked a lot like Tutankhamun II and had his eyes blacked out and stuff, the reason I couldn't see the background, he was in a body bag. That was a photo of a corpse, Susan.
Oh.
Because I've just been sent another photograph. One eye is cracked open, the other is swollen shut and apparently gouged out.
Okay.
Then there's the grinning female soldier with the thumbs up sign over his dead head.
Lindy Ingram?
I don't think that's Lindy.
In other words,
might be. I don't think so. If it is, she had a new duty then.
The minute you kill a human being in the course of torture, there is no statute of limitations. I don't care if it takes the next 60 years. George, Dick, well, Dick, you may not pay for it because with your bum kicker, but George, we're coming for you. It may take us years, but after 10 years, guess what? You lose your Secret Service detail.
Let's not scare the humorless guys in the black suits and the skinny ties. Nobody's coming for George W. Bush.
Oh, hey, wait a minute, though. There's a U.S. statute that says after 10 years, the Secret Service is withdrawn. Or earlier, if the ex-president wishes it. But after 10 years, no Secret Service. Why don't you just save us the trouble and go take a world tour? I'm sure Spain would love to talk to you.
Tough to stomach. Tough to stomach.
What?
Tough to stomach. Mighty tough.
Yeah, I want these dudes.
It should be tough to stomach. Because you know what? I mean, I know, you know, these were the evildoers, and that's what happens to evildoers, and we grin next to their corpses. Hallelujah, praise Jesus. No, because the evildoers are the ones doing the grinning in these photographs. Sorry, Sean Hannity, but they are.
Yeah, the evildoers are the ones that are doing the torture.
And
they're
the evildoers, Susan, were the ones who...
American Soviet.
The evildoers were the ones who wrote the memos that made these people grin beside corpses. The evildoers are the people who were the vice president and the secretary of defense and the assistant secretary of defense. The evildoers are, by God, the Bushes and the Cheneys and the Wolfowitzes and the Rumsfelds and the kind of sleazy Rice and, yeah, the Colin Powells.
Yeah, and yeah, it's looking like the Obama administration, because by shielding these people, they become complicit.
It's the theory of enabling, isn't it?
Well, it's with war crime. A war crime is like a disease. You hide it, you catch it.
I know. Susan, got to roll on. Thank you, dear.
Yeah.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
Email in from William. I don't know what to think other than to say I don't think the people of Iraq or Afghanistan need photos to become more enraged over what we've done. Do Americans actually think for a second that these people don't know well what we have done and saw all of it firsthand? We act like they don't have any way to communicate or are blind and deaf. I think not releasing these photos is more to spare the guilt of the American people like me allowed to be done and to allow these crimes to go unpunished, but it is hardly to spare the people of Iraq and Afghanistan or Pakistan. They see this horror daily, and not in photos, but in life-to-death, real-time horror. Hear, hear. Hear, hear. Our buddy David in South Carolina says if we don't prosecute Cheney, Bush, et al., then we should free all nonviolent prisoners doing time in U.S. prisons and consider the cases of the others. Would any of us be given a free pass? What the does justice mean? Kim says you are the most articulate, profound talk show host that I've ever heard. And coming from a devout Mike Malloy fan, that says a lot. You've articulated my outrage about today's events regarding the non-release of the photos better brilliantly. Using the torture of Christ was spot on and brought tears to my eyes. Thank you. By the way, I'm one of the people who voted for you on Democracy for America. Thank you, Kim, for your thoughts and for your help. It's speechless rendering. Oh, and by the way, the photos have been out for a while. The ones that those are 2006, I think, photos. Those are not the new ones. Those aren't the new ones. Those are the mild ones. Go back and read. Go back and read Seymour Hersh, where he talked about the thousands of photos that still exist, some of which involve photographs of children, little boys, being raped. Under the Bush administration, the war crimes demon ran rampant. And we raped little boys in front of their mothers in order to get their mothers to give up their husbands. We did that. We own that. Our buddy Dave in South Carolina, in an email labeled 10 Fingers and 10 Toes Lindsay, a reference to a great drive-by truckers song called Zip City. I don't mind him being gay, but being closeted and being so mean, someone should open the closet door. It's the vileness of his being that I detest. Between Graham, Demented, and Plantation Mark Sanford, I don't have a chance. David is, after all, in South Carolina. Maura says, from your description of the round, dime-sized wound, it sounds like cigarettes, but a cigarette burn. When I worked with emotionally disturbed kids, I would often see the marks of madness of the children's bodies. The marks inflicted by those who they at one time trusted. I thought cigarette burn too, but these things are just way too bloody, Maura. I know what a cigarette burn looks like. Seen more than I care to remember. And stories I don't want to tell. Not from my own life, but from those of others. And I thought that, but no, they're openly bloody. And they're fresh. And they're not cooked. Whew. But this is what we were allowed to see. Lord only knows what it is that ain't there. Clear it all out. Release them all. Every last one. And let us do our penance. I don't know enough of the history of the era following World War II, but in the days following the close of the war in Europe, were there people advocating for the non-release of the photos from Bergen-Belsen? Dachau, Sobibor, Auschwitz. Was there anyone in the United States? Did the Truman administration say, well, no, that would be sensationalistic to show the corpses of thousands upon thousands of people murdered for nothing more than their ethnicity or their sexuality or their nationality? That would be sensationalistic and serves no purpose. Did anyone do that? I'm not suggesting an answer in either way because I do not have the answer and I do not know. One of you will probably find out and let me know post haste, however.
Hey.
Hey, Juanita.
My heart is weeping.
That means you're human, Juanita. That's a good sign.
Oh, it just breaks my heart. It really does. I sent you an article, I don't know if you've seen it yet, about torture debate prompts evangelical soul searching.
Yes.
61% think that torture is all right if it saves our lives.
And they are typical, you know, the typical fundamentalist in who are thinking that too, aren't they?
Don't think. I hope anybody that has turned against God because of these kind of people, because of the kind of people that had Jesus tortured, I hope they don't think that's what it's all about. Because Jesus told those people back then that they were of their father, the devil. And what he said about the devil was that he was a murderer from the beginning. The truth was not in him. And he called them, that's what he called them. He said, you are of your father, the devil. And they didn't get it.
You know, you said you hope that this does not drive people away from Christianity. I think a lot of people understand that these phony baloney Bible thumpers are in no wise related to the message of Yeshua, the brown-skinned, day-laboring Palestinian. They understand that, Juanita. But what it does, it drives people and this is kind of weird, really. It doesn't drive people not to believe in God so much as it drives them to absolutely, affirmatively believe in the devil. I'm not one of them.
For sure.
I'm not one of them. I believe that good and evil exist in equal measure in the human consciousness, and it takes no deity to bring one or the other to the fore. We talked a lot on this program about broken brains.
Yeah.
And these monsters are people with broken brains.
Well, you know,
But it would make you tend to believe in a devil because you don't want to think that the kind of monstrosity that was practiced all over Iraq, all over Afghanistan, and is practiced day in and day out as we speak at the concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay. We don't want to believe that Americans, let alone human beings, are capable of this. But we are awash in the evidence of it.
And approved. And approved by the authorities, approved. And, you know, they said a few months back, I heard that it was reported that Cheney and Bush had both gone down there and watched them doing torture. Now, don't you know this? That says something about them?
Oh, it says a bunch.
The way that you describe those pictures, most of those people were foaming at the mouth or bleeding at the mouth. How are they going to talk?
There you go, hauling that common sense out again, Juanita.
I know it makes sense, though.
How are you going to talk with a mouth full of loose teeth and blood? I don't know.
But, no, I think those things were done for entertainment.
Yes.
Pure and simple.
They were done for vengeance. You got to remember, they were done for vengeance too. This is, you know, this is early.
In
the Iraq War. This is,
Bob.
Yeah,
that's
this
entertaining.
Is. This is early in the Iraq War. This is 2003. This is Abu Ghraib. And this whole country, let alone the military, was awash in the BS propaganda that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11.
Well. That was going on before he even got in office, before he stole the office. But, I'm just hoping some way, somehow, there will be justice served. I mean, it seldom happens, really. But, I got a call today from the ACLU, and that's what they're, I sent in a, signed something for them, and I've been getting emails, and so they called me today, and That's their number one thing they're concentrating on now, is getting those pictures and, you know, other, you know, bringing somebody to justice. But I told him, I said, I agree with you. It should be number one because our country cannot stand with this going on, eating us up inside. It's like us drinking lye every day or something.
Yeah, see, if there was, if
our country up alive.
I suppose, Juanita, that there is a cogent reason for not releasing more of the photos, and they do. They exist in their thousands.
Well, they say they're worse than anything that's been out before, is what I understand. But
and well, let me just.
What about, like you said about the Nazis, you know, releasing all of that? I mean, I remember seeing little stuff when I was, my mother showed me stuff when I was a little girl that she showed me. She let me know what people had done back then. And I'm grateful to her. And I taught my son about it. And a lot of people don't know. But how can we say anything about the Nazis when we're not, when the people we're allowing to get away with this are not any better? Maybe they're even worse.
I know. Like I said, there's a reason for not releasing any more of these photos. And believe me, if they could have kept the first photos from being released, the Bush administration, they would have.
Yeah. God bless Hirsch.
yeah, indeed. The argument you make is that these are inflammatory to the victims and the friends and the neighbors and the fellow countrymen of the victims, and it will instill in them an abiding sense of yearning for revenge that will last, yea,
yeah,
verily, for generation unto generation down to the end of time. But you know what? That got started with Shock and Awe in March.
Okay?
The photos didn't start that.
No.
Us starting the war started that. And
oh,
there are
yeah.
There are Americans.
That's the crime right there.
There are Americans who will not be born for 200 years against whom the people of that poor benighted nation will hold a call for holy vengeance, who had nothing to do in this except for the accident of their birth.
And they have a right.
Of course, yes, they do. Did we not feel a vengeful fury on September the 11th, 2001? You know, the trick to being human, Juanita, is, and you know, it is, this is a tough trick too. The trick to being human is to overcome that urge for vengeance. And
yeah.
These people who profess to worship Christ Jesus were the first ones to cry vengeance.
What did he say on the cross? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
What else did he say? Judge not that ye also be not judged.
Oh, he said a lot. But
love thine enemy.
He said, love your enemies. He said, what profit is you if you love, you know, those who love you?
Yeah, that's easy.
Yeah, that's easy. And, you know, I just sometimes, like, I said, like, after Bush and all them went in, and I remember Cheney got sick, and I said, God, I don't know what to pray for that guy. I said, because I can't pray anything good. And I just said, I just ask his perfect will be done for him. Because I don't want those people to die. I want them to be judged.
Yeah.
I don't want nothing bad to happen to them, except I wouldn't mind saying, I think I've got a new place for them to go to prison.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I was thinking Angola and Louisiana would be pretty daggum good.
Well, I was thinking about the Everglades Swamp. Or Okefenokee, or whatever the place.
Yeah, just sort of paint them up in goat perfume and drop
and
them in the swamp and let the gators.
Just let them be.
I think you've been reading some Carl Hyacin books, is what you've been doing, because it's.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh, he's a great Florida author, and that sounds like the kind of vengeance that gets meted out in his books.
I just thought about it recently. I don't know. Maybe these things come to me in the air. So. It's like something you just know.
I don't want them tortured. I want them punished. I want them punished appropriately to the. I want them punished appropriately to the crime and within the frame and within the constitutional framework of how we punish people, so that it be not cruel or inhuman. though they themselves were cruel and inhuman.
They could have to be in a position, especially, what's his name, the city stood up when he was.
Yeah, Rumsfeld.
Let them be in a put in positions.
Well, I like to work standing up. I work standing up for hours on end.
Yeah, by his choice.
Well, good. Let's strip you naked and put you in an ice-cold room, beat you for a while, and then let you work standing up, Don.
Just in a stress position. You know, but if they keep on, we're going to we're going to really think of stuff to do.
Blaze, I got a quote for you here, Juanita, from our buddy, critic at large, Reverbo. It is from Blaise Pascal, 17th century French mathematician, who said, "Men never do evil so completely and cheerfully as when they do it from a religious conviction."
Oh, that's true. That's true.
And never forget, as Reverbo reminds me, never forget that George W. Bush, the first means by which he described what he was about to start in the Middle East, the match that he was going to throw on a sea of gasoline. Never forget that the crusade.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Crusade, which, of course, is a
Look
war.
Look how they turned out.
A war for the cross.
Look how they turned out.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't work so good.
It's like I say, it just breaks my heart. I'd just like to read you a little bit. I think I wrote you, but I wanted to add something to it.
Okay.
About the evangelicals. They think they're going into the sky to leave behind all the problems of the world, naked to boot. They think those left behind will be deceived by the Antichrist. They don't know they have already been deceived by him. And I'll add that Jesus said there are many antichrists, or is in there somewhere. There are many
first, second, or third
already.
Peter, yes, antichrists, plural.
Yeah. And I say, my God weeps because I know because I weep. And, you know, you hear people call in to, like, C-SPAN and so forth and say, well, they started it. They beheaded our people. Well, they didn't start doing that until we started stuff.
Well, yeah, and the head of journalist Daniel Pearl is flung around by the right wingers as casus belli, and it's a wholly it is an entirely inapt and false justification. Because first of all, it's the right wing. These are the people who profess to follow Jesus, and Jesus did not go with that eye for an eye kind of judgment.
No, he said, no, that he stopped that. That was one thing he stopped in his teaching.
Yeah, turn the other cheek, and the guy says, how many? Seven times? And Jesus, you know, and that's one of those frustrated moments for poor Jesus. And the guy goes, seven times? Can we say, if we just do it seven times, can we whomp him on the eighth? And Jesus, in frustration, turns to them and says, no, do it seven times 70, because he knew that they were all morons and couldn't, you know, hell, most of the disciples couldn't count to 21 without lifting their robes.
But he loved them.
Yeah. He loved them the way you love people who just don't get it.
Well, actually, nobody really did. Nobody. And, you know, I think that's one of the most hurting things is when you're not understood, especially by those you really are close to or something. It's very hurtful to be, you know, not for somebody not understand you.
I know. And yeah, and it's frustrating in the extreme.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus, do we get a crown? Who gets to sit on your right-hand side,
yeah,
Jesus?
Right.
I want a crown. Do I get a crown, Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
And it's frustration. You all get crowns, okay? You're all sitting next to me, stacked up or something. Did you get crowns? You know, anybody who reads it can tell that, you know, that those, you know, those are not pronouncements. Those are not literal pronouncements that, you know, if you show up at the pearly gates, there's going to sit Jesus, and they're all sitting there on his right-hand side. No. You know, that was the, you know, if Jesus was walking today And that question was posed to him, and the Gospels were written today. The verse after, "Do we get a crown?" would read, "And then did Jesus turn to them and say, shut the f- up. You idiot."
Fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
And remember, he got mad about all that stuff they were selling in the synagogue. He got a little whip out of it. He turned the tables over. He was violent. He got violent. That was the only time.
Yeah. And the fundamentalists tie themselves over into knots over that. And prior to the bombs falling on Iraq at George Bush's behest, the Southern Baptist Convention invited him down to their little Klan rally and declared that it was okay to murder a million innocent civilians in Iraq because Peter owned a sword.
Yeah, one little sword.
Or, you know, render unto... No. The Southern Baptists used render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. The Southern Baptist Church, by way of attempting to justify this illegal, disgusting, immoral war, Juanita, compared George W. Bush with Caesar.
Well, I heard a preacher that was telling his... And he's a very famous minister. And he told him, he brought up that part, you know, about the sword. He says to the people, "I bet you didn't know that was in there. I bet you didn't know that was in there." And, you know, kind of like it made justification for starting a war. But it says, you know, that they had about three swords among them, and Jesus said that was enough. Well, you're going to go to war with three swords? I mean...
No, but if you need to, and that's the thing. If you need a utility tool, and those little short swords were, you know, oftentimes that, you need a little utility tool, you know, a Roman army knife, I guess they would be called in back in the day. No need for corkscrews because they hadn't figured out corks yet. I mean, really, we're going to take fundamentalist literalist advice from people who didn't understand the cork. But anyway, your sword comes in handy if you got to cut some brush, got to make fire.
Yeah.
Then
he said, "Put away your swords. Those who live by the sword will die by the sword." Does Jesus cut off the
deer? George just missed Sunday school that day, the day they were covering that verse. He just...
Well, that was a big-time Baptist minister that told that on TV.
Yeah, George only went to church on the days when they were reading from the smiting parts of the Bible.
Yeah, I loved his interpretation. I tell you who's got the best... funniest interpretations of the Bible is poor old Rush. I mean, he don't know beans. I mean, compared to Bush was a theological scholar compared to him.
Well, it depends on what you mean by beans when you say Rush don't know beans. If you're using that slang term beans to mean illicit thousands of illicit OxyContin pills, he knows lots of beans.
Yeah, well. I don't know wherever that saying came from. I don't know.
Well, that's the short form of an old Southern and Appalachian saying about being unable to notice the obvious, Juanita. He don't know beans when the bags open.
The thing is that poor old Rush surely don't know. I mean, when he tries, I've heard him try to explain about giving somebody food. Oh my gosh!
Yeah. He don't know beans when the bag's open, or as the coarser among us say, he ain't got sense enough to pour pee out of a boot with directions on the heel. So, yeah.
Maybe he's dyslexic.
Maybe he's another one of those broken-brained people who.
I think so.
Yeah, who have lost the ability to understand that they are members of, well. And basically have sent in there, turned over their, you know, they're not human. They're not human anymore. They're better than humans. They're superhuman. They are ubermensch. Ubermenschen.
I'll have to check that out.
Juanita, good hearing
Superman.
From you, dear.
Does that mean Superman?
Yeah. Ubermenschen, Superman, Overman, comes from, I think, Nietzsche, Mann und Übermann. Maybe it's not Nietzsche, somebody else.
Nietzsche sounds... Yiddish, doesn't it?
Well, Yiddish. And that's because Yiddish is influenced by Germanic languages.
Yeah. I'm not. I like to.
Yeah.
see what about words. I have a thing about them.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll let you go.
All right, you take care, Juanita.
And I hope it'll change. Things will change.
Well,
it
I hope they.
Go
I
on
hope
and
they.
On and on.
No, they have to. They just have to get released. Let America do its penance.
Right. Absolutely.
You know,
okay.
And you know how can the right wing complain about this? Release the photos. They've Rush Limbaugh said they're merely fraternity pranks. Now
yeah.
I have never seen a fraternity prank that wound up with a series of you know drill bit holes in someone's lower back.
Unless it was run by George.
Right,
Bush.
But remember, a fraternity prank in George Bush's world involves branding with white
right.
hot metal the Greek letter delta delta into somebody's hide.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, you know, it's so funny because the right wing accuses us of being the ones who believe in a subjective reality and there are no absolute good and absolute evil. And no, they're
yeah,
the ones.
Life, they're right.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is, they're the ones who believe that because they will actually sit and justify torture. They'll sit and justify murder. They will say
yeah.
that there are circumstances under which it is all right to completely absolve oneself of one's membership in the human race and slaughter another human being or make them hurt so bad
yeah.
that they wish that you would finish the job. They're the ones who believe that stuff, not me.
Well, I'll just tell you this. When I was still friends with my right-wing friend, she was saying, I was talking about the people in Iraq, about them suffering. Well, they shouldn't have come over here and blew up our buildings. And I said, they didn't. Well, people like them did.
Well, you know, people like you committed genocide against the Indians. Does that mean I get to pull your toenails out? I mean, what?
Uh-huh. But, you know, you can't argue with something like that. I mean, you can't get anywhere.
No, because it's coming from a place of moral and ethical bankruptcy and death, Juanita.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know any other way to describe it. It just is.
I don't either. And you think you're believing what's right, and she does. She thinks she believes what's right. But she's believing every time I ever talked to her, it was talking points I heard. And I finally cracked, you know, and told her somewhat what I thought. More so. But anyway, I'm glad of it. Sometimes those things are better to do.
Indeed. Juanita, we will talk soon.
Okay, you take care.
Take care, dear. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
View correspondent Juanita calling from Central Florida. Juanita is a whole lot closer to what Jesus was talking about. Than any Southern Baptist minister, than any televangelist, than anyone professing the fundamentalist Christianity will reach in a million years. Fundamentalist Christians are so far past salvation that the light from salvation will be a million light years getting to them. Just is. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
David.
Yes, I sent those photos because I was seeing a trend on this blog that I was reading. And it goes something like this, Bob. I'll take the risk and say that Obama is right on this. Nothing good can come out of releasing these pictures. It's an old case. People were brought to justice and those methods were stopped. Obama's working hard to try and defuse the time bomb that is anti-American sentiment over the world. I'm not an American. I can tell you it's been awful during Bush years. And it's better now, but still not good enough. Showing a few more pictures of crimes made by a few people will refuel everything again. Many of the reactions here are just partisan knee-jerks with very little reason or sobriety. This is just fanatic as the other side.
Wow.
And
but see, that's all wrong because, no, the people who perpetrated this were not brought to justice.
I'll tell you what's really scary because my definition of torture is also it's physical and it's emotional. I look at torture as this way, too. You know, anti-war has a great picture on the front side of their page where they show, and it says on the bottom, they're not coming home, and shows a redirected arrow from Iraq to Afghanistan. And that's exactly what's happening. They're not coming home. We need to get that through our heads right now. They're not coming home. They're just being redirected for another conflict.
2,000 years ago and more, the Roman Empire had a problem. Well, it wasn't an empire then. It was the Roman Republic. Had a little problem. They had more soldiers than they could, and they'd made promises to the soldiers. When you come home, we're going to give you a farm, and you can work your farm to the end of your days and be happy little citizens again. You can be, because they revered their the great King Canatus, who had put down his mattock or spade or whatever, and gone back to serve the Roman Republic, and that was their national myth. And so the idea was that as a citizen soldier, you would go, you would do your soldiering, you would come back, and they would give you some land, and you'd settle and you know do and be farmers. Because that, you know, that was their national myth, character myth. But the Roman Republic sent a whole legions into the Middle East, and the Roman people kept saying, "When are they coming home? When are they coming home?" And they weren't coming home.
Yeah.
Because Rome had nowhere to put them. Rome had put them through such military hell and had them do such awful, awful things in the course of conquest that they dared not bring them home lest they then rise up and create mischief and mayhem in the Republic. And so they went from one place in the Middle East to another place in the Middle East to another place in the Middle East, and they never came home. You're right.
No.
You're right, David.
Yeah, this is my problem, you know, Bob, and this is the other thing that I wanted to bring up. I want to tell people right now that on the Democratic side, we have a think tank that is just as worse as the neocons. They're called CNAS, Center for, let me see what they're, anyways, right over. But I'm getting them ahead of myself. In order to bamboozle the American public into believing that this was a defensive and justifiable war, the neocons and their allies came up with various arguments. Iraq's alleged weapons of mass destruction, his purported plans to attack his neighbors, and his supposed ability to threaten the continental U.S. But their central, if only implied, talking point was that Saddam was in some ways instrumental in bringing about the 9/11 terrorist attacks. For the most part, this was not stated explicitly. The idea was to link Saddam and Osama by referring to them in the same sentence. Yet the implication was clear, and the administration and its media amen corner returned to this theme again and again, arguing that we had to strike Iraq in answer to Al-Qaeda's murderous sneak attack. The Democrats took out after this narrative last year, rightfully pointing out that the links between Saddam and 9/11 were non-existent, and gleefully pointing to Afghanistan as the forgotten front in the war on terrorism, which they claim had been shamefully neglected by the incompetent Bushies. Once they were in power, they averred during the campaign they'd fix that by pouring more troops into Afghanistan and going after alleged Al-Qaeda units operating in Pakistan's untamed tribal areas. These national security Democrats, as they defensively call themselves, to differentiate themselves, I guess, from your regular run-of-the-mill Democratic surrender monkeys, replicated the neocon strategy, first with the think tank, the Center for a New American Security, founded in 2007 and funded as the Wall Street Journal reports by foundations such as the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, as well as some government money to study particular issues. Now, one of their ideas, it's basically a washing of the PNAC, but one of their slogans is clear, hold, and build. We're doing it again, Bob, and these people, as it goes into the article, the corporate money behind this is insane. It's endless.
Yeah, because it's good for corporate. War and bloodshed and grief and suffering and death and maiming and shattered lives are very good for corporate America. It's wonderful for Dianne Feinstein's husband.
Exactly. The slogan, clear, hold, and build, gives me a vision of it's going to happen again. And again, and again.
Clear, hold, and build, David, sounds to me like some sort of strategy you use in some sort of online medieval game or something.
I guess we have a new link to add to the head-on watch list, CNAS.org. So, everybody, we have to keep our eye on this organization. And that's what it made me think of when I was reading that, and then I was reading how people were reacting on a popular blog site. And they just kept bringing up, well, we have to do what's right in Afghanistan, and we can't just quit and go home and we have to continue with the mission. And I just kept thinking to myself, good God, these people are being, their psyche is being melted again. The Democrats are being molded for the new front, the new war on terror. They're redirecting in this direction, and what a disaster it's going to be. And what is their explanation going to be in the next 10 years, the next 5 years? You know, to me, I think, here's the problem with it. Why are we dealing with hypotheticals? What happens when we release these photos and people, and then the terrorists in the Middle East gets outraged? That's a hypothetical. I give you hypotheticals all day long. This is what happened.
Yeah, or I think the other term for that is straw man.
Right, it's straw man. And you know what? These are the problem. This is the problem we deal in this society today, Bob. Constantly, people who don't study and do their homework, they give you hypotheticals all day long. And the only thing you can say to that is, yes, but it hasn't happened. Yes, but it hasn't happened. It didn't happen.
But you can go beyond that. It ain't gonna. I mean, for the love of God, look at the entire Muslim world. You know, during the complaints about the failure to find either A, Osama bin Laden, or B, weapons of mass destruction, or C, any ex post facto justification for the Iraq war, David, the Repiglicans always love to say, yeah, but it's a country the size of California. Remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I just got a question. Let's take that as read. Iraq is the size of California. I guess that means that Saudi Arabia is the size of California and half of Texas.
You know, Bob,
But the question remains, if that's the case, how can a country the size of California or a country the size of Texas take over, destroy an entire country 8, 9, 10,000 miles away that's 100 times its size? Here's a hint.
Yeah.
It can't happen. I mean, the horrors of September the 11th are what they are, and they are historically known, and there are people to this day who live with that brutality and live with the horror. But the fact remains that if September 11th, 2001 happened every day for a year in this country,
yeah,
it would not destroy this country. What it did do is terrify this country. And that is what terrorism is for. The only response to terrorism is to refuse to be terrified. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, it does make sense. And, you know, I was reading on a Democratic Underground, and they take the same line, Bob. People that you would think that were critical thinking people, they take that same line. They bring up that hypothetical, and they bring it in and they say, yes, but this could create more outrage in the Middle East. And I'm like, for the love of God, don't you understand if you don't have any hold any accountability, it's going to happen even worse, not just again.
Seems so easy and so obvious, doesn't it?
I understand. You know what? Here's the thing. I understand people are going to be offended. You know, but there comes a point where there has been so much damage that has been created, you can't hide it.
Well, you know, I keep thinking about these right-wing senators that these right-wing red states keep sending to the Senate and congressmen to the Congress. And these are, you know, the Alabamas and the Georgias and the North Floridas and the Texases and Arkansas and Louisianas. Yeah. And these are all states where you know, these are states of the old Confederacy, and these are, well, you know, if we'd have had a half a chance, we'd have won the Civil War, because we sure whooped the ass. We could whoop them. We ain't afraid of nothing. We get out, you know, we'll whoop them with our hands tied behind our back. We'll kick them to death. We're brave. We're proud. We're noble. We're Southerners. All right? Because, I mean, I grew up in that. And I'm still that way to a certain extent. And yet they elect representatives who go to the Congress of the United States and sit around talking about how terrified they are. You know, you want somebody to go into the South, into the old Confederacy, into these red states and say, by the way, did you know you're sending people to Washington who are calling you all a bunch of chicken shits? Are you all that cowards? Are you all just scared, water-boweled of some 6-foot-7-inch Arab with a portable dialysis machine living in a cave in Pakistan? Is that what a bunch of cowards the South has become? Now, then they would come up and whip your ass for saying that. Because they'd outnumber you. But somebody needs to ask those questions. Are you really scared? Do you pee yourself at the thought of having to go down to the Walmart for the old Roy dog food? Because Osama's going to get you? I mean, you know, just damn.
You know, I was looking at some of these responses again, and one of the responses that I kept seeing, and I just, it makes me just absolutely go up a wall when people say, but we're not torturing anymore. It's like, how do you know? If you don't have any investigations, the prosecutions, how do you know? Why do you keep saying that? But we don't torture anymore. We torture in our prisons every day. What is this stupid meme that came out that says we don't torture? Torture is defined on so many different levels. We torture every day, people.
Ask any human being who's ever been through the input or in through the processing in at the Florida maximum security prison. Ask them if the United States tortures, because you know what, you'll get an oh hell yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And you know, it's the savvy psychological framework, and sometimes I think people don't even know they're doing it. It's like you never even stop to think that what you're saying is just basically National Enquirer, Star Magazine gossip shit. We don't torture. I mean, I'm seeing legal professors on these blogs say the same thing. And it's like they didn't even take the time to think about it for a second and say, wait a minute, how do I know people don't torture anymore if we don't have an investigation, if we don't have a prosecution, if we don't have any of this?
The easy answer is if you do any kind of analytics on this, the answer is, and it's a very convenient and comforting answer to the people who are writing this kind of crap, is that we don't torture anymore that we know of. And as long as we don't know it, it's okay. Out of sight, out of mind.
Exactly. And
there's a moral cowardice and an ethical bankruptcy, I've used that phrase a few times now, that exists in that kind of reasoning that just turns my gut.
By the way, speaking of torture, you know what song I have playing in my head, and it's not Kid Rock.
Thank God.
It's Frank Zappa's The Torture Never Stops. I think that's an appropriate song for today.
Oh, I wish I had it.
Well, I'll see if I can find it anyways. But, you know, I don't know what to say, Bob. The question that keeps coming up now is, I hope people realize that you don't walk away from this. And you don't say there's nothing we can do, because God knows if we did that to every single problem we had in this country, we would be so up a creek, and you and me, we wouldn't be talking on the phone. We would be in the primordial mud, and we'd still be trying to figure out how we're going to get fire to started.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, this is the problem, Bob. I mean, when people say this, I'm going to say, oh, this is too much. And it's like, this is too much. Just imagine what happens if we don't investigate this. Where is your life going to be? How do you know where this is going to go if nothing is held accountable for?
Oh, well, yeah, and speaking of accountability, David.
Yeah.
Just in case, you remember Jay Bibee? Yeah, federal judge Jay Bibee?
Yeah.
Upstanding paragon of moral rectitude who writes torture memos, in his spare time, kind of the way that Saddam Hussein wrote romance novels in his.
Yeah.
Jay Bibee was invited to testify in front of the subcommittee regarding torture and his role in drafting those memos.
Mm-hmm.
Well, according to the Los Angeles Times, he chose to ignore that request. Then today during the hearing, Leahy dropped a little bit of a bombshell. He said the following: since Judge Bybee, through his lawyers, has declined to testify before the committee at this time about his role in the drafting and authorization of memoranda from the Office of Legal Counsel that permitted torture, I can only presume that he has no exonerating information to provide. Ooh, that's just, you know. In other words, he can't save his own ass. He's just going to show up and take the fifth. Judge Bybee must know that the presumption in our civil law is that when a person fails to come forward with information in his possession that is relevant to a matter, it is presumed to be because the information is negative and not helpful to his cause. Testifying voluntarily before the Judiciary Committee about these now public memoranda is one way in which Judge Bybee could have helped complete the record of what happened and why, but he refused. This is especially inappropriate given that Judge Bybee has hardly maintained silence about these matters.
I feel like
so much for accountability, but we got to look forward. Can't be doing that back looking. Got to look forward.
Oh my God, that is the other thing. When someone brings it up, they say, "So what would you rather have?" I remember, I was reading one of these entries, and they said, "So who would you rather have, Michael Steele? I'm going forward." I'm like, this is so retarded. This is so ignorant. It doesn't even make any sense.
But hey, Bob, you just robbed the bank. What are you doing? Going forward.
Going forward,
not looking back at the bank. Got the money.
You know, there is. I think you just thought of a T-shirt again with the going forward. Have a visual of one of the most gruesome tortures, and underneath it says, "Change. Let's just go forward."
Could be. It sounds like a dandy. You know. So, my God, I mean, this is so disgusting. You've got Jay Bybee won't show up. You know, no accountability for Jay Bybee. Meanwhile, however, you know he was at the Office of Legal Counsel, right?
Yeah.
He was a pretty up there lawyer. Office of Legal Counsel. He was confirmed back early in the Bush administration, and this is it just beats the dickens out of me. He was confirmed in 2001 with nothing more than a voice vote in the Senate. Everybody okay with Jay Bybee? He's gonna go to the Office of Legal Counsel and write some torture memos, and people are gonna wind up having Zippos applied to their skin. Everybody all right with that? Aye. Ayes have it. Get to it, Jay. All right, that's Jay Bybee. Well, then there's Harry Reid. Oh, Harry Reid. Oh, ye of little spine. Harry Reid has basically conceded that Barack Obama's choice for head of the Office of Legal Counsel will not be confirmed. Her name is Dawn Johnson. Not Miami Vice Dawn Johnson. Dawn, D-A-W-N Johnson. She's not going to be confirmed because the Repiglicans have told Harry Reid that they ain't a-gonna. That they ain't going to let him have her confirmed. And Harry Reid has said, right now, we're finding out when to do that, get a few Republican votes. We need a couple Republican votes till we can get to 60. This woman's a law professor at the University of Indiana, for God's sakes, okay? It's not like she's out there, you know, some wild-eyed radical environmentalist. No, she's a law professor. I don't know if you've ever been around any of them, but they ain't exactly a scintillating lot, okay? They sit around and talk about geeky things like scintilla uris and things like that.
Yeah.
Nothing more than a voice vote clears a guy who writes a memo advocating the violation of the single most basic principles of human rights and American government. He gets a voice vote under a Republican Senate. A Democratic senator and a woman who would arguably be an advocate for the rule of law. Nah, she's got to have 60 votes, and the Repiglicans can stop her in her tracks. By the way, do you know why they hate her?
No.
She used to work for an organization, if I recall correctly, called NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action League. And she's going to bring their radical feminist agenda to the Office of Legal Counsel, and we can't have that.
Opposed to the radical fundamentalist agenda.
Okay. Which we can have. And the radical torture agenda, which we can have on a voice vote.
Yeah, the radical drug addict agenda, too.
Yeah, right. Well. Sure. To be fair, it's not just Repiglicans who are stopping this. No, good, godly, upstanding, moral, the God-fearing Christians like Ben Nelson, so-called Democrat of Nebraska, he's concerned about her, concerned about her outspoken pro-choice views on abortion.
Man.
Ain't that just like getting your foot stomped?
It does. And I wanted to bring up that my parents, I think this will make you kick the chair. This was the last story I wanted to talk about. My parents recently went to West Virginia.
Yeah?
Yeah. You're not going to like the outcome of what I'm going to say.
Well, you know, I'm used to it. So let's just jump right in.
Well, apparently, my dad's friends, they don't know about the mountaintop removal issue when they live in the mountains.
Well, and if they live in the northern part of the state, that's absolutely likely. There's all kinds of West Virginians that don't know anything about mountaintop removal because it ain't happening in their backyard. We call them NIMBYs.
Right. Anyways, my mom was talking about how West Virginia, and she said she saw something. Now, this might make you kick the table. She saw something on 60 Minutes, and she said, well, I think the reason why a lot of West Virginians have health problems is they drink a lot of Mountain Dew. Good God.
Oh, Diane Sawyer, what have you done to us?
Now, I'm sure you can debunk that in a second.
No. That comes from that Diane Sawyer piece on Appalachia.
Oh, Diane Sawyer?
Yeah, that was on, ABC, the Mouse Network, whatever. In between stories about Britney Spears' hoo-hoo a few weeks back. Diane Sawyer did this piece where she went to Kentucky, Appalachian Kentucky, and interviewed people with bad teeth.
Oh, geez.
And came to the conclusion that poor Appalachian children have bad teeth because their mamas give them Mountain Dew in a bottle. Not a blessed word in there about poison water.
Yeah.
Not a blessed word about there about heavy metals in water.
Uh-huh.
Not a word about breathing ammonium nitrate dust or diesel fuel oil in explosive dust. Not a barely a mention of mountain removal. Nope, that damn Mountain Dew. If they just go over to Orange Crush, everything would be fine.
But there's now of course, Bob, I don't have to ask this, but this obviously is an outright, mostly a myth, correct? About Mountain Dew in the baby bottle?
No, I don't know that it's a myth.
Wow.
But that's not, that ain't Appalachian.
Yeah.
It's not like we don't have sense enough not to give babies pop. The country over, children drink more pop than they drink milk, for God's sakes. And that crap is poison. Yeah, you want to know, this is one of those, and you're our pop culture correspondent, so you'll dig this.
Right.
In the store the other day, I noticed that the Pepsi people have come up with a new beverage. Have you seen this yet?
No, I have not seen the new Pepsi beverage.
It is called Pepsi Throwback. And I thought maybe throwback meant it was in some sort of a can that would biodegrade in the back of your pickup truck when you throwed it back there when you's done with it.
Yeah, I'm guessing they're promoting this to the urban audience.
No, it's Pepsi. No. The urban, throwback is because we got throwback NFL jerseys and throwback NHL jerseys and
right.
The day that LeBron James has to play in a throwback NBA jersey, I think he'll retire. You know, those little guess your religion shorts that Dr. J and Jerry West and those guys wore.
So
throwback is all over the language. No, it's Pepsi throwback. I mean, if I'm seeing it in Appalachia, it can't be for the urban audience. It just can't.
Okay. All right.
Pepsi throwback, and what it is, they tell you on the box, hang on, I've got one here.
Wow. For research purposes only.
It was just out of reach, but I got it. Pepsi throwback made with natural sugar. In other words,
good to know.
It ain't got no high fructose corn sweetener in it.
Hmm.
So that thing is getting out there that high fructose, because that stuff, you know, the massive American obesity problem started really blossoming, you know, kind of like a tulip bulb planted in lard. It started blossoming with the advent of high fructose corn sweetener in our sweets. Because we figured out we could use that proprietary process that has, you know, higher security around it than some nuclear plants, no kidding, and use our corn crop for that, and that would benefit Monsanto, who had developed Roundup Ready corn, which is called number two field grade corn, which is inedible by humans. Okay, I mean, you can boil it for 12 freaking hours, and I don't care how much butter or Old Bay or anything else you put on it, your ass ain't eating it. But it's great for making high fructose corn sweetener. So thereby they could take put a knife in the back of the sugar growers in the United States who are already being supported by subsidies and by trade policies that do not allow, the sugar grown in foreign countries to be brought here because we want to protect the American sugar industry, which is like itsy bitsy bitsy, but they got lots of political power. So Pepsi has come up with Pepsi Throwback with natural sugar. And I guess Coke's going to come out with one too, and that just, but I saw that it just, I thought it was a biodegradable can. Honest to God, I did, but no, it's Pepsi Throwback. It's Pepsi like it used to be, which reminded me of the whole new Coke thing, you know, Pepsi flavored Coke that happened in 1985 and screwed up my last year of college. I was a real Coke fiend back then. Coca-Cola,
and clear Pepsi.
No, well, Pepsi. Oh, Jesus. But you know, Roberto Gosueta and New Coke. You know, I mean. I was a Coke fiend. I tried to snort Coke once, and I almost drowned. But anyway, that's a joke. But you know, it's not just an Appalachian problem, David. It's a nationwide problem of parents giving pop to children. I've gotten so daggum radical in this house. I'd as soon give a fifth of liquor to my youngins as give them a bunch of damn pop. It costs a hell of a lot more, but I bring juice into this house, and we drink juice.
Yeah.
You know, I love that ruby red grapefruit cocktail stuff, which ain't all grapefruit juice. It's, you know, water and crap like that, but it tastes great. But lo and behold, that's another one of those instances where there's a lot of backlash against high fructose corn sweetener, and I found that the Ocean Spray people are now producing ruby red grapefruit juice cocktail, and it says on the label, no damned high fructose corn sweetener, all right?
That's good news to hear about that. I hope it.
But the pop thing, you know, it was sad that Diane Sawyer only discovered that pop was bad for children in Appalachia, because you know what? It's bad for children in the Hamptons too.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's not just the soda pop. It's all of our products, and the fact that we don't have that honest discussion is really revealing for our country and possibly the world. Yeah. So, you know, those type of issues, I guess we just need to be more. See, that's why I stopped my mom when she said that. I was like, do you know how silly that sounds, first of all? Like, no other poison? She's like, well, maybe there were some symptoms. And I was like, you don't even know. You don't live there.
Yeah, that, just say, Mom, selenium. Look it up. Selenium, Mom.
Yeah.
And by the way, do you know about this energy drink, AMP, David?
I've heard about it, yeah.
This is, great moments in commercial corporate marketing America. This just got sent along to me by our buddy David in Tennessee. He said, you only think Pepsi Throwback's a hoot. Look at this. AMP Energy and Dale Earnhardt Jr. are trading paint in the beverage aisle this spring and summer. AMP Energy Drink has a special Dale Earnhardt Jr. Edition coming out with the number 8 with a scar across it like it done rubbed up against somebody in a NASCAR race, because, you know, if you ain't rubbing, you ain't racing. And it's called trading paint. That's what they call it, trading paint, when you're racing and you're rubbing. AMP Energy has announced the launch of Trading Paint, a new limited-time-only Dale Earnhardt Jr.-themed energy drink. The beverage is a collision of three flavors, orange, lime, and berry, with all the energy ingredients and great taste that consumers expect from AMP. Dale Jr. was very involved in creating this new AMP energy flavor, and it is a true representation of his taste and
his sport, said Lauren Hobart, vice president of energy drinks, Pepsi Cola North America Beverages. The flavor and packaging embody the thrills and excitement of side-by-side racing at intense speeds, complete with a look that features all the bumps, scratches, and crashes that Dale's car endures as it advances track position. I guess this stuff's got so damn much energy in it that you get hopped up on a couple of these things, and you just don't care if you bang into furniture. Just trading paint, Ma. Get me another amp.
I only have one thing to say to that. We got to get you to Netroots in August. Holy shit.
Now, what brought that on?
No, I mean, it's just, it's everything. It's the, you know, we need to have a more critical thinking, progressive liberal voice on the airwaves that people say, well, why can't we hear this and why can't we hear that? So in the time when people discover this network and they see where you're going in August, it kind of solidifies and validates what we've been saying for so long about growth and progress and community. And pioneering in different ways to reach different audiences that haven't been done before, and I think that's vitally important for the future as well.
Thank you very kindly, David. I do appreciate that.
And no problem.
It is exciting. The prospects are exciting, and I was just talking with John Fox earlier. We're going to have to try to come up with because we do have to have some extra stuff to get there, and we're going to have to put together some sort of a fund or something to. Take care of all of that stuff. I think it's really important. And, you know, another thing that you bringing that up bears mentioning, you know, I mentioned that I'm going to be broadcasting with Guy James on June the 1st in D.C. We'll be at the Omni Shoreham Hotel. He's been there several times before, and he wrangled me an invite this time, and I'm just tickled pink. But there's not a lot going on during my regular show hours there. All the experts pack up and head off to cocktail hour or whatever, long about 5 o'clock or so. So we're going to try something new and different. Those 3 days, June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, Head On is going to be on the air at noon Eastern, if you can imagine that. I don't know what it's – me trying to work with the sun high in the sky, you know, I may die from sunstroke even if I'm under a roof. I'm just not used to being, you know, hey, it's daytime. You got to get perky. You got to get, hey, wake up, America. I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah, you just gave me an idea, by the way, of how to maybe raise funds on my end. What if I did something like this? I go to auctions from time to time, and I pick up items. Maybe we could have a I don't know if I start going back at all. I haven't been to an auction in about 2 or 3 months, but maybe we could have weekly auction drives for Horn for a particular item and get people involved with something interesting that they could.
Yeah, sort of. You're looking for something, and everybody else will go out and look for it for you.
Yes.
Kind of like I'm trying to find a damn daikon radish right now, and they don't sell them in West Virginia. But no, never mind.
Well, you know, I sell a lot of. Antiques and collectibles, and I guess this is kind of like an incentive to the person who wants to contribute like the biggest bid on something, and then to that money, that proceeds would go directly to your trip. I mean, I think something like that or ideas like that will definitely help or give benefit to what it is you're trying to accomplish, and. I don't know. I think again, it's the unorthodox ideas that are going to get us, again, like how you set up the Head On Radio Network, how Spike. See, this is why I keep telling people, whatever you do and whatever you don't do is drastically important to everyone that you're associated with. Because the fact is you will always regret or you will always be thinking of what it is you could have done. When all there really is just to throw that, pebble, as Albert says, into the water of consciousness and just see what happens. No one's saying anything's going to happen, but what I'm saying is what's important is the fact with just Spike taking that mode and just calling Malloy, he got Bob to number one by doing that or creating that boost and that drive for people to know about it even more. And I think that's what's really important, is that people really need to realize, the people that haven't contributed and the people that haven't called in yet. I'm not mad at you for that, but the fact that you have to utilize and realize your skills and the energy that you have is vital to us surviving as a whole and to helping us progress in a way that we haven't progressed before. That's the other issue. I mean, people really need to get off this whole trip about, like we said the other night, about being average. No. You're an extraordinary person with extraordinary potential. You just need to realize it.
And that's about half the battle, isn't it, David?
Yeah, that's about half the battle. And that's why I keep saying, everyone's idea. Don't say it's stupid, people. Don't say it's stupid. You know what? Write it. Give it to Bob or something. Email it to someone in the horn circle. Don't keep it to yourself, because I don't know what your idea is. And I don't know what is...
Put them... Hey, here's a crazy one. Put them on the forum.
Put them on the forum, exactly. Put your ideas on the forum, and don't be afraid to share. And just continue, and we'll continue to build that web of ideas, because I don't know which is going to be the one that sparks it and lights up the whole proverbial building. But there is that idea. Similar to how Spike just said... I keep going back to this. Similar to how Spike just said, hey, you know what? Maybe if I just call Malloy and get people interested, and you know, to me that's kind of boggling, because I thought, you know, oh wow, Bob's going to get like a 50 or 30, 40 boost, because it takes a little bit of time to sign up. But you know, then I started realizing, I was like, this is a numbers game, people. And
I won't repeat it on the air, but I absolutely loved Spike's excuse for why he did it. He said it was born of pure laziness.
Born of pure laziness. Well, you know, that maybe there you go. Laziness is visionary, I guess, in some certain circumstances. Again, I think where it is you're going and where it is you're going to go in the future, Bob. You know, I don't consider myself a dreamer. I consider myself when you have visions to see them through. That's what I do with my business. That's what I've been doing with my life. And I can see you broadcasting in China. I can see you broadcasting in Australia. I can see you broadcasting in all the places you never thought you could broadcast when we have the technology that we currently have. We just need to get that sponsorship. And believe me, Bob, with the support of the people that we have out here, with the support that we have of people listening, with just the ideas and just the willpower, we have the power to have you broadcast anywhere on this planet, if we really want it.
I think so too, David. I think so too.
And I want people to just keep that in mind. Just look at all the people who decide they want to go someplace, decide they want to broadcast somewhere, decide, oh, I want to be hooked up with this sponsor and one of this. And just ask yourself this. Ask yourself this one question. What separates you from them? And you know what the answer is? The answer is they decided to see this through their plan, they knew what they wanted, and they went for it. That's the difference. That's the difference. That's how we can bring Bob and the whole horn network anywhere on this planet. I guarantee you, anywhere on this planet. And when people see the limited resources that they spend, and if we put that support, if we put this support to any foundation that we currently want to go after, they're going to see that too. They're going to see that audience. They're going to see that the energy's there, and they're going to be amazed that this just started out of a will.
You know what? You remind me of something in what you just said. Another great, that's very inspiring, and it reminds me of this great inspirational speech.
Yeah.
Hey! What's this lying around shit? Well, what the hell is supposed to do, you moron?
War's over, man. Wormer dropped a big one.
What? Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
German? Forget it, he's rolling.
Forget it, he's rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, couldn't resist.
But anyways, you know, people, listen to me. Don't lose hope in regarding anything regarding this network, regarding the funds. It really is up to all of us. And I think it's clearer and clearer every day that we need to propel our ideas forward. And if when Bob does go to Netroots, not if, when Bob goes to Netroots, then we can start thinking on other ways. Where else do we want to see Bob? Well, I'd like to see him in Russia. Well, how do we get Bob and the Horn Network to Russia? Bob, you need to globe track with your whole family across the world.
Nothing would tickle me more. Nothing would tickle me more.
I can see it happening because, listen, if Anthony Bourdain can get through what it is he wanted to do in his life.
I ain't eating no warthog butt.
Okay, don't eat no warthog butt. That's a definite. But I'm telling you, there is a way, and we have the will, and it's as simple as that.
Very true. David, thanks a million.
No problem. Just remember, clear, hold, build.
Clear, hold, build. And stay the hell away from the Mountain Dew if you value your teeth.
All right, thank you.
Later, David.
Later.
Bye now. That's our pop culture correspondent, David, calling from Maine. If you're on hold, please stay that way. I will be back momentarily. It's 10 minutes past 8 p.m. here on the East Coast. I haven't had much of a break yet. We need one of those. And given the nature of the conversation tonight, I can't imagine a song more apropos than this for break time. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are listening to Activist Radio. You're listening to The Horn.
The streets are filled with laughter and light, and the music of the season, and the merchants' windows are all bright with the faces of the children, and the families hurrying to their homes as the sky darkens and freezes. We'll be gathering around their hearts and tables, giving thanks for God's graces and the birth of the rebel Jesus. Oh, they call him by the Prince of Peace, and they call him by the Savior, and they pray to him upon the seas. And in every bold endeavor, and they fill his churches with their pride and gold, as their faith in him increases. But they've turned the nature that I worship in from a temple to a robber's den. In the words of the rebel Jesus. The same as the rebel Jesus. But pardon me if I have seemed to take the tone of judgment, for I've no wish to come between this day and your enjoyment. In a life of hardship and of earthly toil, there's a need for anything that frees us. So I bid you pleasure and I bid you cheer from a heathen and a pagan. on the side of the rebel Jesus.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
You heard B-Rez with the number there. Learn it, know it, use it. Email rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D @gmail.com. Your comments, of course, are always welcome. A couple of comments coming from our buddy Marty. He says, the problem is, in the subject line, as disgusted as I am with all this, meaning torture, photographs, yada, 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 but you know that the right-winger media is going to go on and applaud the conduct in code, most likely. My friends, it was only a fraternity prank. And there, apparently, is what you and Juanita have just mentioned. There are people, freepers, you know the type, who just wave us off and say, well, you know, those brown people, they deserved it. My idea for punishment for these war criminals, says Marty, and the enablers of the war criminals, is this. They must rebuild, by hand, Spandau Prison. Then, if they survive, they serve a life sentence in the new Spandau Prison. Yeah, see, being someone who is opposed to the death penalty, as I am, it's real hard where these architects of torture are concerned for me to argue against the Spandau Ballet. And you all know who that is. Marty also notes, with my mention of the beheading of Daniel Pearl, were they really Muslims? Or were they Blackwater or some other mercenary dressed up to look like Muslims? Remember, false flag. And it wasn't Daniel Pearl that I noticed that so much with, but the young man, I'm ashamed of myself, I cannot remember his name, someone will remind me in a moment, the young man who went over there to, I guess, help build cell phone towers or some such and wound up getting beheaded. And yet the photographs, and I remember this vividly, the photographs that were put out by the tourists had plastic Walmart chairs in them. Remember those? And the whole thing just screamed, the whole set just screamed, bought at Walmart? Yeah, I remember being a little taken aback, put off by that as well. Gosh, I hope you know the phone number. Like I said, fire it up. We've got, 35 more minutes of good conversation in us, I hope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
the Walmart chairs.
Remember those? Little plastic ones?
Yeah, I do. And I was reading last night someone on Facebook has an art project he's doing to start a discussion about something called Order 81. And that was one of the orders put forth by Viceroy L. Paul Bremer, who's a corporate lawyer, you know, most of the time. Then he was viceroy.
When he isn't out courting death and losing. Yeah, but L. Paul Bremer got a Medal of Freedom, right? That one?
Yeah. Yep, yep.
Got a Medal of Freedom and for screwing up the Coalition Provisional Authority so much that they lost $8 billion in cash. 18 tractor-trailer truckloads of shrink-wrapped $100 bills they lost.
Kind of lost. Some of it that you saw go into their friends' bank accounts and, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, who were they to know that there was a secret funnel placed under the couch in the Coalition Provisional Authority lobby that just went straight into, terrorist and Powell's bank account? Who were they? You know, couldn't possibly know.
Right. But Order 81 specifically is about redesigning Iraq's agriculture system. And Iraqi farmers were going to be required to get their seeds from either
Monsanto,
Cargill. I think Monsanto, and then there was another one I hadn't heard of.
I don't recall knowing that it was Order 81, but I remember hearing about that, Preston, because it was one of those things that, because of my hang up with history and everything, just drove me through the roof. We're going to make sure that they buy their wheat seed and their barley seed and their rye seed and all their other grain seed. They're going to buy those seeds from Cargill or Monsanto or such, and Monsanto is going to keep a very close accounting of who's growing which seed in the place where growing wheat was, I don't know, invented?
Right.
The irony might have been lost on the rest of the world, but it, by God, landed on me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah. I think some top executive, you know, one of those vice presidents at Cargill was actually appointed to head the Iraq Department of Agriculture or Ministry of Agriculture. So.
Oh, I wish I was surprised, but I'm not.
Yeah. So it was about more than the oil, for sure. It's about agriculture. It's about water. Also, Iraq, although it's a desert in many areas, it has some huge aquifers, which sustains, you know, these interesting cities and oases and stuff like that.
And, you know, there are those, they got a couple of rivers.
Yep.
That whole Mesopotamia word that we like to use is Greek for land between the rivers.
Right, right. Did I tell you that Nestle is moving in on Colorado, you know, starting their encroachment, trying to privatize our water, get control of it?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Kind of by Salida, Colorado, and I forget the other town, but David Sirota interviewed a lady from that, reporter from that area this morning about it, and, yeah, they want to divert some of the water and bottle it and truck it to Denver and then fly it across the country. Really efficient, you know, one of these efficiencies of the marketplace that's so wonderful. It's totally inefficient.
Sounds like the sanest thing since Fiji water.
Right, right. You know, I mean, there are instances where bottled water can be a convenience. And, you know, again, there's, you know, moments of utility. But by and large, it's way overblown, over-marketed. city tap water is good, even though it gets dissed constantly, and that's also a manufactured perception to try to drive business towards themselves, again,
right,
creating unnecessary markets.
And I remember in the aftermath, as it happened, September 11th, 2001, I don't know if you recall this story or not, Preston, but the story of Starbucks out there selling water at $9 a bottle.
Okay.
Yeah, I've never quite looked at Starbucks the same way since, and Agnes won't go in one.
Yep. That's a shame. What else? well, I heard you talking about energy drinks, AMP.
AMP, yes. Trade and paint.
And wasn't Dale Earnhardt, or maybe it was Dale Earnhardt Jr., who, you know, in a better moment, recommended that he was being interviewed after he had won a race or was in a race, and they're like, so, you know, what are you up to, da-da-da. He's like, to be honest with you, me and I saw Fahrenheit 9/11 last night, and I'm going to take my whole crew to go see that important film. Did you catch that?
I don't know if that was that Dale? I don't know. I don't remember that story. That one's
I believe so. I'll try to Google, like, Dale Earnhardt and Fahrenheit 9/11, but yeah, someone like that put in a plug for the Moore film, Fahrenheit 9/11, over, you know, NASCAR television, and I thought it was great.
Lord, the France family must have had a purple polka-dotted connection.
Can you imagine? And also in NASCAR, regarding NASCAR tales, I think it was the Denver City Council. I don't think, maybe it was the state legislature. I don't know, one of them. Approved a bill to provide $50 million to build a NASCAR racetrack here.
Yeah, because that's what, you know, that's what Colorado's crying out for, Preston.
It's such a disgrace. You know, there's like next to no discussion of this. Again, David Sirota brought it up on his show this morning. And
well, it isn't, and I know we rest his soul wherever it may be, or our buddy Clyde Kenny from WD-40, who passed away several months back, but of whom I think frequently, loved him some NASCAR. And I know there are a lot of people who do.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't one of them. And maybe that's because I just got exposed to it at the wrong time or wrong place or something. I've been to Talladega and so forth. Just don't get. But at this, you know, as we talk about a green economy, as we, you know, as we contemplate what America needs in order to fix itself, Preston, isn't NASCAR as it is currently constituted just a monument to conspicuous consumption?
Yeah, and it's a new version of the chariot races once again. You know,
bread and circuses, sure. I mean, you know what? I'd love to see, because I don't know if you've ever seen it, but the Tesla Roadster. Have you ever seen that thing?
Yeah, you know, Bob, I want to say real quickly, I do try to be careful not to be hypercritical. And again, you know, bottled water can have its place. You know, NASCAR, that stuff too can have its appeal. And I don't.
Sure. But no, I understand it. But what I was going to say is, I'd love to, because if I don't know that much about NASCAR, but they've all got the same, and just sounds funny to say, they've all the cars, whether they are said to be Dodges, Fords, Chevys, or Toyotas, they've all got the same rear end. Okay? They've all got the same this and the same that, because they try to come up with a standardized car so that the race itself is a battle between drivers, because they've tried to turn that into a personality-driven, you know, thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, why?
Yeah.
And the car companies that participate in NASCAR are heavily invested in it. All right.
Oh yeah.
It's great PR, but you know what? Why not? One race a year, or a new series? You know, because there's not, you know, there's the what used to be the Winston Cup. I think it's the Nextel Cup now. And then there's the Busch Series, and there's the Craftsman Truck Series.
It's endless.
Why can't we have one series for really fast cars that are electric? Now, maybe that's conspicuous consumption of electricity because there's still, you know, that whole issue is still fraught with problems. And, you know, you plug your car into the wall, and that means they got to blow up more mountains to get more electricity into your wall socket to power your Prius.
Oh, and that, the lithium that we've been talking about,
yes.
I learned recently where a whole bunch of that's going to be coming from Bolivia. Apparently that salt plain that they've got, you may have seen it.
Yes, I have.
Photograph books. Underneath that is like one of the largest deposits of lithium.
Oh, dear God, another case of cherche la poor people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it'll suck to live around there.
Yeah. And I also read about how the people who lived around there, they've been mining salt for a long time, and it seems pretty sustainable, the amounts that they take and stuff. They'll pile it into these mounds, and then they used to ride it down to towns on their llamas. And they've been doing that for a long, long time. But recently the trucking industry took that over, and so now they truck the salt down, so they lost those jobs. And I guess some of them may, you know, get a job at the lithium plant now. But
you know, bless your heart, you are so even-tempered, Preston. Do you just a secret among you, me, and the Horn family? Do you ever read these stories and just scream, or want
yeah,
to?
I mean, it boils. I mean, there is like a fire at times for sure. Sometimes, you know, that's where I think art can be so helpful to kind of process some of this stuff. Some people do screaming therapy. Some people drink heavily, you know, a wide range of approaches, and, you know, different things work for different people. But some music, you know, rap's been helpful to me. Some punk, you know, punk, there's a lot of screaming going on in some of that. There's this one group called Propagandhi that just brings it in a loud, angry way. And I think through that, I have out my screams vicariously. So, yeah. Yeah, there's raging against the machine for sure, but there's, well.
No, I didn't say that to put you on the spot, Preston. Is it,
no, it's okay. It's
because,
okay.
You know, when you've got, for instance, what you just described, a system that has literally worked for, you know, 500 years, 1,000, because those salts were valuable before there were, you know, in pre-Columbian times as well. There was a brilliantly developed, beautiful civilization that existed in that region. No, we gotta burn more fossil fuels to carry the stuff, because just having human beings pack it down on the back of a beast of burden that has been an adequate beast of burden for, you know, all, you know, 18,000 years, we can't have that.
Right.
And it's
and it's a great local, you know, appropriate market and economy and system of commerce for them. And, you know, people would love to see that kind of thing going on. Again, I think that's where Bourdain and Zimmern are doing such important work, because they're finding those places where some of those, you know, non-Walmart.
Yeah, I think I saw a Zimmern episode where he was in Bolivia.
Yeah, yeah, and he actually met with a shaman, which is a radical thing to do. And he was being very, you know, respectful and courteous. But there was a part where the shaman's like blowing this fire air on him, like burning off his chest hairs and stuff. And he's like, okay, this is getting a little tough. <You know?
laughs> Well, that's what I said to David from Maine a little bit ago. I ain't eating a warthog butt. You know, I'll travel the world, but I ain't eating a warthog butt.
Right, right. So,
They pay Tony Bourdain to eat that stuff. You know, me, you know, no, not so much.
Yeah, I just saw his show last night in Japan. And it was the least food-oriented show I think I've seen him ever do. I mean, he did eat and enjoy that stuff for sure, but he spent a lot of time, like, learning about this particular Japanese art form of, like, plant arrangements, flower arrangements.
Yeah, oh, I saw that episode, yeah.
Okay, okay.
And is that the one where he also visited the blacksmith and master knife maker?
Yeah, and did the sword.
Yeah, I got such, you know, I'm a kitchen freak. I'm a foodie, I guess is the word for it. to the extent that I possibly can be. I'm on a holy mission to find a daikon radish right now. But I saw that knife portion of that program and just broke out into sweats. Good kitchen cutlery just gets me all beside myself. And the folding of the steel again and again, and the hammering and the heating and the, I want me one of them knives so bad.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought it was interesting, that whole, you know, him visiting the, it was like the samurai sword people.
Yeah.
You know, they're, you know, ritual, you know, working out that inclination towards us that can be aggressive and violent, but doing it, again, at a different scale, in a different way. In fact, a lot of Native Americans, they're often portrayed as always being brutal towards each other, and, you know, there's moments of truth to that, but oftentimes their conflicts and their war making was like one tribe would steal the other tribe's horses and take, you know, six of them, and then later the tribe would steal them back, and there's a lot of just touching. Like, if you could touch the chief of the other tribe, you know, that was like a victory, a type of warfare. There's been some anthropologists have written about this. Derek Jensen writes about it in Language Older Than Words and stuff like that. It was a lot of, like, theater, and it just didn't.
Well, even the more brutal stuff, when the Spanish monsters arrived in the New World, they were horrified to find that there was human sacrifice taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And as it developed, they were called the Flowery Wars, or the Wars of the Flowers, where one group of people in central Mexico would make war against another group of people in central Mexico, with whom at the same time they had a complete trading relationship. Okay? But they had the for whatever anthropological reasons, these Wars of the Flowers developed, and the point was not to kill anybody on the battlefield, but rather to take them captive and then sacrifice them later. And, of course, the Spaniards were just horrified. And the Mexica people whose accounts still exist today to the extent that they do, looked at the Spaniards and said, "What are you upset about? You kill the people during the battle. We have the battle, and then we kill the people."
Mm-hmm.
We don't see a difference. And really, you know, how much is there? You know, how many people, you know, the Bush administration benefited greatly by the dummied up, ginned up, faked up, rubed up, frauded up rules that they established for declaring what was and was not a battlefield casualty. And if you didn't drop dead in Iraq, you didn't die from battle. You know, if you happened to die at Rammstein, or you came home and you died by suicide by cop, you were not a battlefield casualty.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept the numbers that were horrifying enough artificially low that way.
Yeah.
You know, what's the difference? You know, how many people, how do I put this without being crass? And I'm not trying to be crass, and I often find my, there is not a person who at any time in the future will pass away who served in Vietnam who will not be a casualty of the Vietnam War. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense, definitely.
Every name of every human being who served in Vietnam will eventually deserve to be on that wall in Washington, D.C., because that war directly or indirectly killed them. We said, you know, we've been told that the signature injury of George Bush's war against the people of Iraq, at least as far as our service personnel are concerned, is traumatic brain injury. How many people will die in the next 50 years who served in Iraq, whose death will be traceable directly to their participation in that war? You know, it wasn't that far into the Iraq War that we were finding out about studies of National Guardsmen who came home. There was a group in Mississippi, I believe. Every single one of them came home, and if they fathered or mothered a child, the child was born with profound birth defects.
Yeah.
Now, how is that child not a casualty of the Iraq War?
Yeah.
I guess it's a question of internalization and versus externalization of results.
Yep. And, you know, also those five, you know, soldiers killed by a fellow soldier, and, you know, how much of that going on back here in the homeland, where people just exploding and taking it out on you know, maybe a spouse or a coworker or someone they're driving next to.
Right. And how are those people not victims of the Iraq War?
Yeah, collateral damage, some might call them. Yeah, it's, you know, broken bodies, broken spirits, broken treasury. It's a real shame for sure in so many ways. And have you seen the series on PBS that's been playing the past 5 weeks or so, something called We Shall Remain?
Sadly, no.
Okay,
my access to television is severely limited.
Okay. It's about Native American history in America. Pretty well done. Not totally pleased with it, but like a lot of it. And actually, they recently had John Trudell. They had him on a segment during an interview on their last segment on Wounded Knee. And there's an earlier episode about Tecumseh. And apparently he was organizing all these different Native American nations and making this kind of pan-Indian resistance. Came very close to repelling the West and what they were calling progress. So, I don't know, as mean as the Indians may have been to each other at times, there were still 500 nations, you know?
Yes.
And they were still not committing genocide against each other. And I don't know. I, you know, they try to convince us that war has been our history and it's our natural state. And I'm just finding those arguments to be weaker all the time. I really do. There's a book out right now called Will War Ever End? A Soldier's Vision of Peace for the 21st Century. And I think I may have mentioned it to you before, but it has a foreword by Lieutenant Dave Grossman, who taught at West Point and is a major critic of some of the, you know, the imagery that we're having pounded into our heads through video games and so many movies and Kiefer Sutherland posturing and all that stuff.
Yeah, when he's not headbutting fashion designers in nightclubs in New York, right?
Yeah. So, anyway, will war ever end? And this guy, I'd love to see this guy get more media, because what would Limbaugh and Hannity do? They'd have a hard time touching this person, because he's still in the military right now. He's at Fort Bliss in Texas, where he heads a Patriot missile battery. And that book just came to mind. Also, quickly, before I let you go, back to the energy drink thing. One of the ingredients in energy drinks I noticed is something called guarana.
Yes.
Okay. And I read about it on Wikipedia to learn, you know, because I did used to drink a few of those. But they're so sweet and kind of expensive, and, you know, the aluminum can and all that. So I looked into this ingredient, and apparently, from what they can tell, it's considered a generally safe drug. And it's kind of like a coffee bean. Anyway, you can find it in pill form if anyone ever needs a little oomph in the day and they want something other than a super sweet energy drink with corn syrup that I guess has mercury in it now. Did you see that story?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, can you see the label? Now with mercury!
Right. So just say yes to the guarana. No.
But you do have to be careful with it. It can be harmful. I can't. Yeah. I, for instance, cannot get near the stuff with a 20-foot battle lance.
That's true.
It would blow my heart up like it had a firecracker in it.
Yeah, definitely. Proceed with caution. And what else? Oh, I learned about nutmeg recently. Malcolm X used to, when he was in prison, he used to run with this group called the Nutmeg Men. And apparently if you, like, take a big spoonful of it, it has a psychoactive effect.
Yes.
And again, proceed with caution. There's warning, you know, you could really be in trouble if you did that. But still, I think it's curious how people have, you know, these different relations with different substances. The morning glory, their seeds, they go way back to like.
You know, my buddy, the farmer who used to just drive his tractor up and down the thousands of acres that he farmed every year. They'd start out in the morning, just eat a handful of morning glory seeds and get in the tractor. I don't know how safe that was.
Oh my gosh, I bet that was amazing.
Yeah, and here's the fun part. His favorite part of the process was that, you know, he was an industrial farmer. He had one of these great big humongous John Deere tractors with the enclosed cab and the air conditioning, and back then a cassette deck. And he would eat his morning glory seeds, get in the tractor cab, and put on an ABBA tape. Peter Godbold would be so proud. Frankly, trip his little brains out going up and down the rows in the tractor listening to ABBA singing Dancing Queen.
Just out of curiosity, what kind of farm did he have?
Corn. But this is back in the day before Roundup Ready or Number 2 Field Grade or anything. He was actually growing real corn.
You would have been so happy yesterday, last night on the Sundance Channel. Tuesday evening is their big kind of green programming night. And the documentary they showed is called The World According to Monsanto. And it was a brilliantly crafted just critique of what they're up to and the resistance. They went to Mexico and sat in on these meetings of small campesinos who are getting together and educating themselves about this. They have a lot of photos of these, you know, example of pollution going on with the genetic seeds, pollen blowing over to organic, natural crops. And they're just telling people to be vigilant, tear this stuff up. You know, they also went to Uruguay, which has already planted hundreds of thousands of acres of this crap, sadly. But again, there is a resistance growing. In fact, there was a guy. One of the lectures I did go to was by a guy named Jeff Smith. He was at that Green Festival here in Denver, and it was so great because, like, 4 days later, he was on the Tom Hartman show. Tom had a substitute while his mom passed away, I guess, recently. And his substitute interviewed this Jeff Smith guy, and he was on phone from Brazil. So he's down there working with the South Americans and just trying to, you know, share the information about this stuff, which is problematic in so many ways. So, anyway, lastly, a non-psychoactive, something I've been enjoying instead of energy drinks. Have you ever heard of kombucha tea?
Yes.
Okay.
That's another proceed with caution, a lot of caution.
Okay, and check out Wikipedia on that as well. But apparently one of its selling points, and, you know, some of these elixirs, who knows, you know. But I don't know, maybe there is something to snake oil. <You know? laughs> I mean, yes, there's a lot of people selling the inauthentic type, but, you know. You know, they're selling a lot of fish oil these days, and I don't know, it probably has its benefits, I imagine. But but not too much because they're, you know, scooping up so much of the, you know, life in the seas, so much of it. But anyway, the kombucha tea, one of its selling points is something called probiotics.
Right.
Which brings to mind, again, it's that pattern of thinking. Obama talked about this in some of his speeches, habits of thought, and the Buddha talks about it, and others, Malcolm X. And regarding our own bacteria inside, our approach in Western medicine so often has been to war. You identify something as completely the enemy and you try to wipe it out. So you sell billions and billions and billions of pills of antibiotics, and then you push them on the cows and the pigs and the chickens. And you wind up
with seas of that stuff in somewhere in Mexico, in which the critters that grow in it accustomed to that stuff and are then resistant to any drug therapy. Oh yeah, and see in the natural world, Preston, the response to that kind of human behavior is generally to breed harder. You know, ranchers found out after long trial and long years of trying to eradicate the coyote, for instance, that the harder you kill them, the faster you kill them, the harder they breed.
That's right. When they're under duress,
the litters get bigger, not smaller.
Yep, and the time between them will be shorter. And it's really interesting what the
And that there's a learning curve as well, because one of the tactics that turns out to work is there's a breed of dog that looks a lot like a sheep. And instead of killing all the coyotes, you put a few of those dogs in among your sheep herd. The coyotes come along and get and the dog takes them out, and the coyotes go back and in their coyote conversation, hey, there's some mean sheep in there. You know, we ought to stay away. And they don't breed harder. They don't breed faster. They don't have bigger litters, but they don't bother your herd as much.
How interesting.
The same thing with stuff that happens on a microscopic level. These are intelligences. It's almost like something out of a science fiction movie. These are intelligences that have intelligences that we are not intelligent enough to comprehend. Just because it ain't got a spine, just because we can't go, oh, there's the brain. We sell them short, I think, but well, you know, it's just a virus. Well, there's more of them on the planet than there are of us. And they've been a hell of a lot more successful, frankly.
Mm-hmm. And although we won't be able to comprehend it all, we certainly can just be better observers of it and maybe pick up some things through that. A naturalist, that's a profession that needs to be revived. I'd like to see some stimulus money for some more naturalists in the world. Of course, one of the better known ones was Thoreau in his sketches and observations at Walden Pond and all that. But there's some modern day, I know there's a guy in the Ozarks who's doing very similar work, living much like him as well. And there's a wonderful documentary about him called The Naturalist. And High Plains Films actually is a distributor of stuff like that. They also did a movie called Varmints about prairie dogs and their prairie dog communities. And apparently they've got a bark or a squeak that they'll do when they see a human being, and then they've got a different squeak that they'll do when they see a human being with a gun. And
The prairie dog equivalent of, you know, he's it's a human being with a gun.
Yeah, so heads up and
actually, in their case, it's heads down.
There you go. There you go. Yep. But I saw where goats are being used. I think it was in Uncommon Dreams, or maybe Mother News Network. I don't know. Mother Earth News. I don't know. But goats are being used in around the San Francisco Bay Area to eat some of those invasive weeds we were talking about. That, you know, suck up a lot of oil, water, not oil. I wish it'd suck up oil, but water, and also can become fire hazards. And again, if they're not managed the right way, they can also eat, you know, they almost drove some indigenous plants to extinction. But
right.
If you work with it, and people know ways of working with it, it can be a great beneficial thing. And the San Francisco officials say they haven't had one of these huge wildfires because of them. They've been using them for a couple decades, I guess. But
don't be darned.
Yeah, and they said one of they also have had that same problem with the bark beetle eating the forests and creating all this dry timber. So you never know. Maybe we might have to bring some goats here to Colorado, and it'd be better than a NASCAR track, anyway.
I was going to say, it beats the dickens out of it. No, they'll probably bring the goats to clear the brush to build the NASCAR track.
Right.
You know,
right.
Getting green wrong. Or greenwashing the NASCAR track, you know, built by goats.
Exactly.
You know, we've got to be cognizant of that, too. Preston, wonderful to hear from you.
Yeah, likewise.
And we will talk soon.
It sounds good.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And let's see, did you stay with us? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob Giovecchio.
Hey, Giovecchio.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Hey, okay, I just called because I hadn't called in a long time. I've been a little busy, but I wanted to let you know that I was still alive out here and still doing stuff.
Well, you know, it's important to know that Giovecchio is doing stuff. What kind of stuff is Giovecchio doing?
Well, you know, the stuff I've been doing for Digital Workforce. In fact, I wanted to talk to you about maybe getting my boss to talk to you on the show because you're talking about how stimulus affects people in a direct way. This is one of those situations where it does, in a very green, environment, I guess, for want of a better word, where we, for those of you who don't know, I'm doing work now refurbishing computers. Basically, what happens is when colleges decide they want to upgrade their computers, or other organizations, or anybody who just wants to donate one, we take them, rebuild them, refurbish them, and then they get sent back into the community. Last Friday, we gave out 50 computers to local schools and community organizations, and they're used for people to get online, look for jobs, look for work, that sort of thing.
Awesome.
So, and it's a very good, it's great because not only is it a job for me and for other people, because there's two other students who are going through the A-plus certification course who are also involved with this, but it also gives back to the community, which is something I think is very important.
Well, yeah, it does, and it keeps those computers out of a giant landfill somewhere in China, too.
Exactly. That's even more important. So I'm very happy to be doing what I'm doing. In fact, we're getting ready. We're just still waiting on the funding for it, which hopefully should be coming through soon. There's a community in Chicago called Pilsen. It's in the city, but it's like different sections of the city. And every household in Pilsen is going to be getting a computer.
Beautiful.
So I'm very happy. That's over 3,000 computers. That's like a three-year program. And that's only one of many. And it's a very burgeoning industry right now. So, but I wanted to keep everybody posted. And I'm sorry I haven't been able to call in much longer. I've been keeping track of the Daily Drama, to be perfectly honest. I think I get tired of the little daily outrages, so I just kind of, as much as possible, tune it out. I see little things here and there, and I keep track of what's going on, but the daily drama just drives me up a wall sometimes.
Understandable. Entirely understandable.
Well, you know, we live in an insane time. I mean, I look at what's going on in Washington, and I get, you know, I read people like Glenn Greenwald, who like, and my good friend Evadon Carroll of The Sideshow, and I know you guys do this to a certain extent because I listen in from time to time. But every day, it's a nonstop. Obama's just as bad as Bush. Obama's just as bad as Bush, because he's not acting on stuff as quickly as we would like. I realize it seems like an eternity since the inauguration, but it really has only been about 3 months, and there's only a certain amount you can get done.
I recognize all that. I'm not really nearly so much in the he ain't doing enough fast enough camp as I am in the incrementalism. I will go a long way with somebody. I'll put up with a lot. I won't sit and make rationalizations for things that I believe are utterly wrong. However, and you know, that's what's going on with me with this business of the torture photos.
Yeah, I think I talked to my good friend Athena Fascistan, who follows this much more closely than I do, and he said, the word that he's getting is that Pakistan called up Obama and they were afraid that releasing these photographs would make things worse for them. And it's not that he's stopping it, he's just kind of delaying it for a month or so.
Well, they entered an objection to the release, and it was not entered based on timing. It was entered based on the release.
Well, we'll see. All I can say is we'll see what happens. I mean, he did eventually, after a delay, he did eventually release the torture memos.
Some of them.
Okay, some of them. Well, there's still others out there, and they're going through it. Hell, they got tons of documents out there. But if you listen to, if you read some bloggers that are out there, it's like, oh, he might as well be Bush, and that's really.
I won't go there. I won't do that.
Yeah. So.
I sat there and watched we had a lot of fun with the correspondence dinner audio and stuff on Monday. And right. Just seeing him at the White House correspondence dinner, even though I find that whole thing repulsive to begin with.
I do find the whole thing repulsive.
But to see him standing up there and speaking in complete sentences, speaking rationally, not mocking dead soldiers by presenting a film of him crawling under the furniture looking for weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
His press conferences are refreshing, Joe. He ain't Bush. He ain't even remotely like Bush. But what he is in a position where he's getting advice from people perhaps too much immersed in the Washington and the corporate culture.
I think that's probably a lot of what's going on, but I think also from everything that I've learned about him, he's very much more a pragmatist who's going to try to work within the system as much as possible. But he's not Franklin Roosevelt. And I know that there were people who had some hope that he would be like Franklin Roosevelt, but I think the people who knew who he was and how he worked realized that that wasn't going to be the case.
I didn't go into the election cycle thinking he was a liberal. Because he's not.
He's not as liberal as we would like.
No, he's not a liberal. He is a centrist. He is a pragmatist. The fact that the right wing has to, you know, whoever it is that runs for president, well, they were just rated by the Center for Integrity and Conservative Politics as the most liberal human being to ever take a breath on planet Earth.
Are you kidding? That's the nicest thing they're saying. Have you know what they've done is, so I think they issued a vote among the Republicans to rename the Democratic Party the Democrat Socialist Party.
Didn't even get to that tonight, just because that's a furniture kicker. And I almost, in a way, I refuse to give them, to afford them the credibility of my outrage.
And but they've just gone completely insane. I mean, and look, they kicked out Spector, who is hardly a liberal, you know. They're getting ready to kick out Charlie Crist, governor of Florida, who is not a liberal by any stretch of the imagination. They're basing their entire party on ideological purity, and it's destroying them.
And that's fine by me.
They are officially the regional party of the old Confederacy.
They are that, and frankly, they're going to be Whigs real soon.
If
not already.
The only thing that's kept them alive is the massive amount of money people keep throwing at them.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that's kept them alive. In fact, they should have died during the 40s and the 50s after New Deal liberalism took over, but the only thing that kept them going was that they scared people into commies, you know? How have I described the Republican Party before? They're a Ponzi scheme masquerading as a protection racket.
There you go. Exactly. Hey, Joe, I wish I'd gotten
into giving them power, and then they use that power to steal from them.
I wish I'd gotten to you quicker, but we done run over time, brother.
Yeah, I know. I realize that, but listen, if you could, give me a call back after the show is over, because there are some things I would like to talk to you about.
Okie dokie, I will do that.
You still have my home number, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just give me a call back when you're all done there.
Okay, take care, Joe.
Take care, Bob. Talk to you later.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our good friend and once and hopefully future horn host, Joe Vecchio from Chicago. Wow, we are out of time. I've run over. I apologize, Ben. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for putting up with me ranting and raising a ruckus. I hope. Well, I know in so many of these things that you feel the same way I do. And we raise our ruckus together, and then we go out and we take the ruckus elsewhere, and we make manifest to our elected representatives that we're not just sitting here ranting because we have a ranting gene. We're ranting because the very notion of what it is to be American is being bent over and violated. This is one of those nights that could have been a six-hour show, frankly. But it's not going to be. It's time for me to knock off. I've got errands to run, things to do, obviously phone calls to make. So thank you. Thank you to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Thank you to John Fox, our chief engineer, and so many more things. Thank you to Ben Birch, the hardest-working man in liberal talk at WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben never sends a bill. He just relies on you to know how to do the right thing. Thank you to everyone who, via your money contributions, your idea contributions, your emails, your chatting in the chat room, your postings on the forum, your calls to this program. Thank you to everyone who provides the entire reason for the existence of the horn. Our sincere thanks are unending. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. You hear a lot about what's going on in the fight for Appalachian justice and the struggle to create an Appalachian renaissance. And everything that happens, Coal River Mountain Watch is a central part of. And they are tireless. And they are constant in their dedication. And always... always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
switch. Run, I say! Run!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Hear my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six. Five. Four. Three. Two. One.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
My fellow
Americans,
ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, now. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Good to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Looks like it might rain here in Southwest Florida today, and believe me, we could use the rain. I think we have had a total of 1.5 inches of rain this year so far. So, rain, yes. Let it come. We can certainly use it. We've had a fire going on down in the Everglades, for a month now at least. And Interstate 75, better known as Alligator Alley across there, has been shut about every other day and then opened up again. It's been difficult to travel back and forth to Miami. But anyway, enough of our weather woes. Welcome. Coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Fort Myers and Naples area. Always glad to have all of you along with us. See, we've got a few people in on the chat room already. Bedtime for Bonzo, Notterjay, and Texas Betsy's there. And there'll be more joining us soon. And if you're listening somewhere other than the Head On Radio Network, tune in to the Head On Radio Network and join in on the chat room. We'd love to have you get in on the conversation there as well. Kind of a happy group there most of the time. Not a lot of big news today. This was one of those days where it was fairly difficult to prepare for a show because not anything earth-shaking. Now, I hear people already saying, what do you mean there's nothing big today? Well, there's lots of things going on, but just nothing that literally shook the world today, I don't think, is a major news story. But we have a lot of things that we will talk about today, and if you'd like to join the program, you can join us via telephone, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254, and we'd be glad to have you join us here on the program. That reminds me, I better go check out the phone here a little bit. Don't pay attention to me. I've got to go over to do a little engineering here and see what happens. Have to check out our Vonage site today. We do use Vonage on this program, and I'm checking to make sure everything on the rollover system is set up today. Something tells me it wasn't. That's why I'm going to go check it out real quick like here. But you will be able to call us 866-546-5254 if you've got minutes to spare of your own. Give us